You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
The Boss Hog of Liberty podcast is the latest hit on the We Are Libertarians Network. Each week, Jeremiah Morrill and Dakota Davis explore life in Henry County, Indiana.
It's a show about our circle of friends, public officials, and our experiences. 80% observation, life, humor, and 20% politics. Boss Hog of Liberty is the day-to-day happenings of Henry County, Indiana, which is just like your community. Add us on iTunes and sample us today.
Dear Leader would want you to.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
Hey, Liberty Rockers, this is Johnny Rocket from the Johnny Rocket Launchpad. Each week, I strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, economists, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check it out at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com or find us on iTunes. Each show is action-packed, explicit, and a lot of fun. So join me at JohnnyRocketLaunchpad.com every week for the newest episode. Keep liberty alive and rock and roll.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Chris Spangle. We bring you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves while putting people before political parties. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective with the goal of leaving you better informed. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Patreon at WeAreLibertarians.com. In exchange for supporting our program, we give you all kinds of bonus content. Please be warned that this show is raw, unedited, and authentic, so the language is sometimes strong and offensive. I am the vocally strained Chris Spangle, coming off of 2 weeks of laryngitis, and I am joined by two chatty people who will carry us through the day. First, one of the original co-hosts, Chris Galt. How are you?
Great. Don't act like you don't have a lot to talk about.
Oh, I have a lot to say.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a lot of ability to say it.
We'll get it out of you.
Yeah, and then Reinhold joins us again. Reinhold, how are you?
I am doing well.
All right. Reinhold Uppity, you walked in here with Fiji water.
I'm trying to be a good guest and not assume that I'm just going to suck all your water down.
Well, as we all know, water's very important to me.
Expensive.
Well, not here. I have free water.
You have free water.
I just run it through the Brita filter.
Wow.
What?
So why aren't you just filling up jugs and running them to Flint, Michigan and helping people? Like,
because I don't care.
Go out to the creek and just put some jugs in the water there and bring it back.
Go water the plants in California,
you know,
man.
We know what Harry would say.
If you have free water, you can save the world.
Now, I went to Detroit this past, earlier this week, on Tuesday and Wednesday, and drove by Flint. Didn't even stop. I just drove right by it. Didn't stop to help the people. Unbelievable.
And you have free water.
Just like a typical libertarian, cared only about myself.
Living in your own reality.
I had 8 bottles of water in my bag, and that's not a joke.
Fiji water?
Well, I see. So I drink about a gallon and a half of water a day. On race day, where you walk, I walk 10 miles, and yeah. I was out in the heat from 7 to 7. I drank 2.64 gallons of water.
Wow.
Because nice. I just constantly sucking it down. But at the end of the day, I felt great.
Yep.
I felt like $1 million after all that exercise.
And everyone else around you was dead.
Dead.
And he just couldn't tell anybody.
Because they didn't drink any water.
My friend Hannah was in town, and she was on the pullout couch here, just like crashed dead because she was dehydrated and perhaps overserved. Maybe that's the way to put it. She had a little bit much. A little too much Hawaiian punch from the little
and not diet. Enough water.
Yeah, not enough water. But no, I drink, I have Nalgene bottles, 32, and I've got a 48 ounce because I roll like that. Took 2 of those, and then I took 8 bottles of 20 ounce bottles of water out there with me. Didn't even stop.
Plastic bottles?
Yeah. Okay. I stole them from work.
What brand?
I don't know.
Not Dasani.
Hinkley.
Right?
Hinkley. Oh. Yeah. Hinkley Springs.
Hinkley Springs water.
Not sure what it is. It's probably from Ohio, and it's from Dayton, Ohio's water supply. I just drove right past Flint. I didn't even offer. I got to Farmington Hills, didn't offer a single person water there. Just uncaring.
Wow.
Thanks for calling me out on it.
Wow.
Great meetings. I went to downtown Detroit. I got to see beautiful downtown Detroit.
Is it beautiful?
No. It's the biggest piece of garbage town I've ever seen.
Oh.
But Toledo's lovely. I had no expectations of Toledo, and Toledo was clean and beautiful.
You went
beautiful.
To both?
Yep.
Oh, it's, wow. It's wonderful there when the lake is not on fire.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, the river.
I went in the Fisher Building, in the like where the original GM part was, and then the Fisher Building. Beautiful, beautiful place. But Detroit downtown, not the greatest. But I did have amazing chicken and waffles.
Nice.
The trip across the bridge is pretty nice.
Yeah. Right. Over to Clean Canada. So, yes.
I know you went there. You met with
That's
them.
That's where all the fun stuff happens.
Shut
too. You're their insider.
Shut your dirty mouth. So I apologize for the infrequency of the episodes. You probably can't, thanks to processing and increased gain, hear it too much. But if I were to talk in my normal voice, this is how it would sound. So I'm kind of straining a little bit, so I'm not going to be able to talk. I've had laryngitis. So I went on that Vegas trip early March 12th or May 12th and then got some sort of creeping crud on the plane on the way back, and then got really sick, lost my voice, couldn't make a sound for like 4 days, couldn't do the podcast. Well, you heard at the last episode we did. I mean, you were here, Reinhold. My voice by the end of it was shot.
Yeah, we could have gone another hour or two on that discussion.
Of course, but I was in so much pain.
Yeah, it was getting really bad at the end.
Yeah, I mean,
it started off really well.
Yeah, but I've had a sore throat every single day. It's been really rough, and it kind of makes you go, ooh, man, it really is important to have a voice when you're podcasting or working radio.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of people do those YouTube videos, and they just have the computer read it. You know, that's like the thing now. I don't understand it, but
I just need
I'm an old guy. Maybe it's just me.
I just need to upgrade Harry's chips. So when I type in, repeats what I say, implying Harry's a robot, but he's not. So I've got a lot to say, not a lot of ability to say it, but I've got a lot to talk about. I want to start with this. I would say that it was really good for me personally to have so much downtime because I have been working my butt off on the show really hard since, let's say, late October.
Yeah, we can tell.
Reasons.
Yeah.
It's been good.
Right. I've been working really hard on the show, doing a lot of reading, and I really dove in and just kind of was like, all right, well, the next 6 months of the show have to be really good. And I think I want to just kind of talk about a little revelation here for about a couple minutes. That was a really rough time for me, far rougher than I let on, and far more stuff happened than we talked about, but that's irrelevant, but it was to distract myself from it, I really dove in and did a lot of work on the show, and got a little too tight on stuff, and tried to do a little too much, and I think part of the reason that I got so sick is the amount of stress. And when you hold on to stuff, it's just not good.
Mm-hmm.
And that friend came into town, long conversations that weekend, a Memorial Day weekend, and I kind of realized, like, I'm holding on way too tight. I'm not having as much fun on the show. I think that reflects a little bit the balance of what we used to call autism and comedy. We used to do more comedy and less autism, which I will call knowledge now because, you know, after talking to people, like, that's not a really nice thing to say. And you have to – for this to work, it's really about having a relaxed discussion and an ensemble with friends. And I have tried to not really let anybody – other than Harry, who I trust implicitly – not let anybody on more than once a week. You know, so a lot of mental – stupid shit that I had to let go of. And so it was a really nice break to kind of let go of that and then really get in touch with why I love doing this, because it's fun. It's fun to hang out with friends. Mm-hmm. It's fun to research. It's fun to talk to you guys. You know, the best thing about the Patreon is the ability to talk to the audience. And I firmly believe that had we not had the Patreon, which gave me the connection to the audience, to, you know, 100 of our hardest core followers, I don't think I would still be doing We Are Libertarians. I think that was such a big blow to me that I would have stopped doing the show. But having those Patreon supporters especially, and having you guys write in and tell you how much you enjoy the show, when I personally wasn't all that, I was motivated to do it, but I wasn't. I was doing it begrudgingly. It was a second job for about the last 4 months. But you keep going because there's so many people that do enjoy it, and then eventually you snap out of your dumb mood, and then you go, oh, I really love doing this. So I want to say a thank you to anybody that's written in, and I do this all the time, but it really means so much to me. If you wrote in, if you are part of our Facebook group, if you are part of our Discord, if you're part of our Patreon supporters, you have had such a huge impact on me in a positive way, not just the last 6 months, but over the course of time, that I truly do appreciate it. And then going up to Detroit and doing stuff for my day job and really engaging in the radio world and digital world and some of those conversations, like, I don't know, I'm really invigorated. I'm really excited to be here. I'm really excited to do this. I started working on some new projects that I just kind of shelved for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And really excited to kind of to get back behind the microphone. For the past week, I've just been like, I don't know, I hadn't done it for a couple of weeks, and then we did that episode, and I just felt so relaxed afterwards. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm just all pent up again. So really excited to get back and just kind of say, hey, I'm gonna lighten up a little bit. Still keep making sure that I'm doing the reading. I consider myself a professional reader, and then this is the output. But you know, kind of having a little more fun. So can't promise that's going to happen tonight, though.
Oh yeah. You invited the two funnest people on.
Oh, you're a blast. No one's more fun than Chris Galt. People say it to me all the time. How do you have so much fun with Chris Galt? Can't you just ask him not to come over anymore? Just seriously, ask him not to come around anymore. He's too much fun.
Well, now you're getting rid of the one-a-week rule. So I can come over all the time
all
now,
the time.
Right?
Every
yeah, I'll be here every day.
Well, I was just kind of like...
Weekdays.
I think if you're in my position and you consider somebody so integral to the show and then they're not there anymore and you're real like upset about it, you go, I'm never going to put myself in that position again.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and there was trepidation even with Harry, who is fundamentally one of the most decent human beings alive. You know, so you just go, all right, grit my teeth a little bit. So, you know, I've kind of atrophied the group a little bit. You know, and we've had over the course of this 30, 40 people who have rotated on over the course of the podcast.
Bigger than I ever imagined.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, when it was just the three of us in 2012. Yeah. So we're down to half a dozen people that I feel like I can call at any time. And, you know, and so I just need to recruit a little bit and get people back on here. But a lot of it is just, it's hard to find interesting and funny. Especially in libertarians, because you can find funny people or you can find libertarians. They're not usually in the same breath.
Yeah.
So. So, anyways, not much point to this other than just to say thank you. While we were gone, I don't know about you two, but I feel like the bullshit meter is pegging a 12 on a scale of 10.
Oh, man.
Like, opening up social media over the last month, but specifically the last 4 weeks, I feel like we're on a tear where the amount of outrage over dumb things has really peaked. Like, we're really at a tipping point. It can't get worse than this.
People want to be outraged. Yeah. It's like the looking for things. Please, say something that I can get outraged about.
Like, Roseanne, Samantha Bee, you know.
It's all just crap.
Well, just Donald Trump makes an offhanded comment. Oh, it's a constitutional crisis.
Oh, right. Sean Hannity.
Right.
It's just anything stuff to be mad about.
Right.
That's
gay cakes.
You can't even make a joke anymore.
Right.
That used to be what comedy was offending people.
Well, most comedians now are saying that
they don't know
where to go. They can't do it anymore.
It's impossible. I work in the
comedy. Judy Gold said she's not doing colleges anymore, and she's one of the most liberal comedians I know.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't go there and make a joke. It's not worth it.
Hardcore liberal comedians haven't been going to college campuses for about 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
That started when I started at the day job, which is a comedy show. We're slowing down a little. All right. Let's start with the outrage and start picking some of this apart. Let me start here. I really started thinking a lot about how we got here. When a friend came into town on Saturday, and we went walking around downtown, and so we decided to meet up at the Indiana War Memorial downtown. And she's
my normal hangout spot too.
Yeah, she's from Atlanta. She's visiting the state and was like, "Hey, I want to see Indy." So, of course, I took her to a war memorial. but she was a nerd and wanted to see it. So, if
she didn't want to pull it down,
no. if you've been to the Indiana War Memorial, we have the second.
We'll be on the right side.
Yeah, we have the second largest amount of memorials after Washington D.C., and we have this one that looks like a giant pyramid. And you go in there, and it is the most beautiful marble you've ever seen in the world. And then you go up to the top, and it's a sanctum. It's a sanctuary. And it is these enormous marble columns with large marble tomb, large marble walls, portraits of World War I generals on the wall, civic sayings sculpted. And it's just like a really weird out of place. Have either of you been in it?
I have.
What do you think of it?
I actually enjoy the feeling that you are in there. It's like it's a step out of where you're at, right?
Right.
The hubbub and the things going on. But it is a real good tribute to the sacrifices that people gave to the country and especially from here. And it's got this serene feeling to it. It's just like a whole different, it makes you very much realize that life that's going on right now is not as serious as people are making it out to be.
This was built 1928, mm-hmm. so about 90 years ago, and she just looks at me and she goes, "How did this get built?" Because I think people who are our age, or me and Chris's age,
mm-hmm.
who are in their 20s and 30s are used to very antiseptic drywall, you know, very, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you walk in that Fisher building in Detroit, just Google it and look at the entrance or Google the Indiana War Memorial Sanctuary to see what we're talking about. And you just go, how did our society at a time when we had far less resources and money build mm-hmm. something like this?
Because people were dedicated to doing it. When you get people dedicated to doing something, you accomplish anything. It's getting people together to do it. It's the hard part.
Right. So I just I looked at it and I said, I think it's because we had less government and we had more social clubs. And I started really kind of thinking about the role of social clubs. And obviously we won't get into all the social clubs of the 20s in Indiana. you know, the Odd Fellows, the Masons, the Rotary, the Lions Club. Indiana had a very strong club society. We had a very strong religious network of people. You know, we went to a couple churches, and there was the Italian church. The poor white trash church where my grandma went. There was the... Mm-hmm. So
the Scottish Rite.
The Scottish Rite. You have... In Indianapolis, and much like you, in your town 100 years ago, you know, she at one point looked at me and she goes, and let me ask you guys this question. If you are not political and you are not religious, how do you make friends offline in 2018? What advice would you give someone who is non-religious, non-political?
At your job. Try to make friends at your job.
Okay.
That's about it. A bar?
Okay.
Well, those are a couple different ways.
The internet? Oh, well, you said
farmers
no internet.
Markets.
There's nothing.
There's all kinds of clubs going on today.
Mm-hmm.
It's nobody's going out and looking for them. They organize online, which helps it. So you can go to Facebook and get into a little grouping of people. The thing, we can say stuff about the internet and how things were kind of better before it, but growing up in that time, it wasn't easy to make friends and do stuff. Like, right. I lived in a rural area, and I grew up as a nerd, and I was really kind of the only one. There was 25 or 40 people in my graduating class, right? Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of people in my school, which is how you make friends out there. And I was very, very much into nerd things.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the internet to go, oh, there are other people like me.
But I think we're also talking about, what, the 80s?
Yeah, it was 70s. Yeah.
So my grandfather was big in these clubs in the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. You know, he
car clubs and things like
he
that.
He went to go play cards at the Lions or the mm-hmm. Rotarians. And I just said there was a time in this city, in this country, where people, because they didn't have a dependence on government, they would go out and they would network together in these clubs, and they would rally around values and principles, and in some case interests, but in a lot of ways, you know, things like the Salvation Army, the Rotarians, these are about around principles, values, morals, bigger ideas. Now, I'm not going to...
Not always for the good.
No, sure. No, I mean, there's the Klan, for instance. You know, but you had these groups where people networked together, and they were kind of forced to network together, personally, because they didn't have the government to rely on, and they didn't have the internet to organize them.
And communities used to take care of themselves, too.
Sure. I
mean, you knew who your neighbor was. Your neighbor needed help, whether you agreed with them or you had disputes with them. They needed help. You took care of it. So
the outspring of that are things like these memorials and these big buildings. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that we in this generation need to build those things, but it then you have the collapse of those social groups in the 50s. They start to dwindle in the 40s and 50s, and then that's replaced by church. That's replaced by everybody goes to church. The idea of a Christian America was really invented post World War II. Because the idea of a Christian America, it was used to counterbalance godless atheist communism, and it was used to drive people, drive the perception that we were immoral people and they were bad people, and so we need to enact the domino theory and keep people from keep those countries from falling communist. So you then build this strong fabric of church society, and that carries on into the 90s and into the megachurch movement. But once you get to our generation, you know, the idea of going to church is not something that most of us want to do. The idea of joining a social club is not something that most people want to do. Any kind of group that you join is political, or maybe you're in a religious group, or maybe it's around some sort of consumer hobby, a hobby where you buy stuff to support that habit.
Essential oils.
Gaming, for instance.
Yeah. There aren't those groups out there. How many people actually sit down and think about the higher ideas of life, think about their place in the world, think about the purpose that they have in life? You know, if you're in a Masonic group 100 years ago, it's all about examining your place in the world and how can you improve your community. Now, when we look back on history, we romanticize it, and that's a problem. Okay, so let's say 20% of the population was part of these groups. You know, I don't know, but they were much more prominent, and there were many more opportunities for people to have face-to-face contact with other human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that post-divorce, We Are Libertarians saved my life, and I don't mean that in any over-exaggerated way. I hadn't really established a connection with my family like I have now, and this group of people became my family. And the social circle that we formed around We Are Libertarians 2013 to now has served, I think, for many of us who are involved, the 20 people who are pretty intimately involved, and then spinning off into things like Boss Hog of Liberty and creating a community there, that's been incredibly important for my life. you know, for the times when you weren't fired, your life, you know, things like the Discord. You know, Reinhold is somebody that I had met previously, but now we're friends, and it's because of the Discord. But we organized around this principle of libertarianism, this value system, and started organizing people. But we didn't really become good friends or friendly until we started hanging out in person and seeing each other in person.
Yeah.
And so I think the loss of...
But don't you think that is a club?
We Are Libertarians is definitely a club.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
so
I think
there are more clubs than ever, really.
And I think
they just use the internet to organize.
Yeah, I think people like Christy Avery. I mean, Christy Avery has become a person that I talk to every morning. She is so sweet. She messages me every morning and says, good morning. become a dear friend. You know, I think, and by extension, you listening, you are dipping your toe into that friend circle. You develop an affinity for us and think about your place in the world because you were an active listener to this conversation that we have. Mm-hmm. And I think the world is a worse place because over the last 20 years, we have really stopped engaging in a personal way. I think the 200,000, 300,000 years of human evolution, of human history, where we talked in small groups face to face, has been pretty successful for the human animal.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 20 years that we've actively moved away from that, have been in some ways very good, but in some ways very bad. And I think we've lost the ability to talk to each other. And again, it's not like the 80s or the 70s were a bastion of feel good, everybody loves each other. There were hundreds of bombings and domestic terrorist attacks in the late 60s, early 70s.
A lot of the clubs you're talking about were created mostly to be exclusionary.
Absolutely.
Right. So there's no doubt.
Right.
Now, I think there's a lot of benefit from us being more connected technologically. So that, like in my case where I grew up and there was really nobody like me around, I could now go out and find people like that.
Right.
And be able to communicate with them and everything else. But it's you remove that face-to-faceness. And when you're talking to somebody online, it's not the same
mm-hmm.
as a face-to-face conversation. There's things you will say to people and attitudes you will have towards people online that you would never do face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
So that
mm-hmm.
becomes the bad side, you know, of that you're now communicating with people who are still going to take that in. You're being more – there are people who are more divisive, more mean, more angry mm-hmm. because they have that protection of anonymity and space.
There's studies that the reason road rage exists is that people don't see humans in a car. They see an inanimate object in a car and rage at it.
Right. Well, it's the same thing with politics now is that what people do is they declare that the other side is not human.
Enemy.
They see them as unhuman people. So they're able to focus rage and energy on them that they would never focus on anybody they knew face to face.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the left and right tonight. I mean,
the right
because
and wrong.
In the right and wrong. Reinhold, James Neese says, Reinhold, top Discord autist in terms of post count. I don't know what that means. But,
yeah, but I'm still not number one on the Discord because they include the Duck Hunt channel into the experience points calculation. So I'm
well,
not
get
one.
Rid of the Duck Hunt channel here. Get nuke it.
No.
Thank you.
Well,
no. Thank you. Just delete it.
I thought
get
you were
it.
Like
delete
so
it.
Favorite, so loving of that place.
No. I'm banned from it.
No, he just dropped the hammer. It's gone. Better be gone when the show's over.
So I don't know how to, because we're at a point where discussing things somehow mean that you agree with things or you disagree with things. Like having a conversation. Mm-hmm. Somehow, and a huge part of this is Trump, and I posted this because I really kind of clarified it. I think we're at a point where we've given Trump exactly what Trump wants.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is the lodestar of American society. Everything is judged based on your opinion of Donald Trump.
Well, and I think the biggest telling of that.
And it has devolved into grunts of, you like Trump or not like Trump. You not like Trump like me? We friends. You enemy. Like, I think we have devolved into, completely gotten rid of all of the complexity of human society. You take something like the kneeling issue, for instance. there's a complex issue there. Colin Kaepernick sucked. He got benched. He got pissed and sat on the bench during the national anthem. Then when he was called out on it, made up a story about police brutality. Does he believe it? I'm sure he believes it. But that's the origin of the story. That's an inherently pro-conservative side fact, is the debate about systemic racism in police departments towards black people. Statistically verifiably true and wrong. Point liberals. Donald Trump comes in and he turns the conversation away from that inconvenient, difficult conversation towards, you don't support the soldiers. Completely unattached to the entire narrative. And then everybody ends up arguing, does Colin Kaepernick support the soldiers or not? He does. Colin Kaepernick started kneeling because a soldier said, hey, dude, it's disrespectful for you to sit. Said, okay, I'll compromise. I'll kneel. Again, a complex, inconvenient fact totally lost in that you probably haven't heard anywhere else because nobody can have a discussion about any of this without someone interrupting 13 words in and going, do you agree with me or not? And I think that we're at such a point in society where everybody's fighting about Roseanne and Samantha Bee and kneeling and gay cakes because we don't have a secure notion of our own identity, our own purpose in the world. I think people like Jordan Peterson are becoming popular because he's asking people in a polite way to examine that. He's challenging them to think about their beliefs. And that's why he catches on. And Trump has... we have to stop giving Trump what he wants. But you know, here's Jordan Peterson, who's doing good in the world by asking people to examine what they think and how they behave and realize there's consequences to your words. Every tweet could be life or death for someone. You're submitting approval or disapproval to the hive mind that eventually has power to rob people of their life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But how does the left take Dr. Jordan Peterson?
Oh, my friend watches Jordan Peterson. What should I do? Who should I tell?
This is a Dear Abby letter to the nation.
The nation.
I'm going to have you read the letter, Galt, so I can rest my voice. Just a moment.
All right. I can read.
Pretend you're a girl.
Oh, no, I can't.
And do then it I will
voice,
I will but... read her response. Okay? Or maybe you read what she says, okay?
Dear Lisa?
Cuz you read the question and then you I'll read the response.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I'm reading Dear Lisa.
Yep.
All right. Dear Lisa, I fell into an instant and deep connection with a man while on a work trip. I'm happily married, so there's no chance of romantic future. But friendship has been and is enlivening. We share many interests, but mostly we have an easy understanding, something slow and patient and unusual in this world. When we occasionally talk on the phone about life and we're looking forward to having lunch and when our paths cross again next month.
Sounds very sexy.
However, in the gaps between conversations, I've come to realize that he might be a fan of Jordan Peterson.
Oh.
He hasn't mentioned his name, but there have been some very significant clues. More alarming, he has betrayed a thin skinnedness around it. He has betrayed a thin skinnedness around sensitive topics like #MeToo and transgender issues. He has said nothing that's outright offensive, maybe because I've made my politics clear. But if I ask directly and he responds affirmatively that he is a fan of Peterson, what should I do?
Ooh. All right, now let's hear the answer.
Fan of social Darwinism.
Let's see what this writer says.
That's what she signed it.
Oh, boy. Today, Junior.
Reinhold gets to be a man? You did that on purpose.
Yes. You're a cuck. Okay. Big cuck.
You're not a fan. Both of you are lucky. Not enough people make time for real conversation and friendship in adulthood. As well, too many people isolate themselves from anyone whose value or politics are at odds with their own. And when we do that, we get intellectually soft. Worse, we lose the empathy with our opponents that can be so crucial to persuasion. That said, not a fan, I'm delighted you plan to keep your clothes on, not only because you're happily married, but also because it would be advice columnist malpractice to condone sex with a Jordan Peterson fan.
Okay, stop right there. Having sex with a fan of Jordan Peterson. Now, she's being funny, all right? So let's not get our panties too in a wad. She's being funny, but she's being half funny. She's pretty serious, but she's joking. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's, she's trying to be cute, but right. She's being mean at the same
she's
time.
She's being serious. So incels are not worth mating with, is what she's saying. Continue.
Well, yeah. For those readers who have been dwelling in happy ignorance, Jordan Peterson is a Canadian psychologist, best-selling author, and wildly popular YouTube star, promulgating backwards and deeply unoriginal biological determinism with certainty, zeal, and a lot of Jungian mumbo-jumbo. Confronting Peterson's repellent ideas, if you can do so without getting defensive or insulting, might actually help your friend think through some of these issues. There are a few things you can recommend that he check out if you want to consider gently counter the propaganda.
The propaganda.
Yep.
Okay.
One is any book by Cordelia Fine, a psychologist who has been ruthlessly dissecting the banal discourse over essential differences between the sexes for years. Another is a wonderful video called Jordan Peterson Contrapoints by the trans femme YouTube star Natalie Nguyen, who does a fabulous job of acknowledging the value of Peterson's self-help advice. You wouldn't be reading this if no one needed advice, while exposing his far-right political agenda. What's more important than refuting Peterson empirically, says Harrison Fluss, a political theorist who has studied the alt-right extensively, is understanding that he's an ideologue and that you should therefore engage in philosophical battle. Peterson, Fluss tells me, has a disdain for mass society, which he thinks is making us weak and effeminate. Faced with the growing popularity of socialist and social democratic ideas, Peterson constantly raises the specter of the gulag, Stalinist dictatorship, to him is always just around the corner. It's a really scary dog whistle, Fluss says. In that context, if you want to convince your friend not to be a Peterson fan, it's probably more important to persuade him of the merits of your own progressive ideology than of the specific wrongness of Peterson's many claims.
Now, let me explain a dog whistle. A dog whistle is like, you blow the whistle, you can't hear it, but the dog can hear it. Mm-hmm. That is usually a conservative says something that is a secret racist signal to their followers.
States' rights.
States' rights, for instance, is a dog whistle.
Property rights.
If you're talking about property rights and dog rights, you're basically dog whistling racist propaganda to your side. Because, again, everything's racist. So continue, please.
If your friend is indeed a Peterson admirer, I also wonder if he might be depressed and lonely. Even more the rage, transphobia, or misogyny. The effect most palpable in Peterson's public appearances is melancholy. He cries a lot, and the anger he expresses is of a brittle, depressive sort. I wonder to what extent his appeal lies in giving expression to, as well as providing narratives to explain, male sorrow. He also offers sad men empathy, a warm respite from the cold shoulder everyone gets from the neoliberalism and many men imagine they are getting from women and feminism.
Meanwhile, the next sentence is about the coldest shoulder that you can possibly imagine. He imagines that we're giving him the cold shoulder. Go ahead.
So you may, outside the context of a political discussion, want to suggest to that your friends seek treatment for depression or at least spend less time on YouTube, which can be a cesspool of self-reinforcing masculine ailments and symptoms.
Is that it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what she is saying is that if he listens to Jordan Peterson, and the title's on thenation.com, I think my friend is a Jordan Peterson fan, what should I do? I'll also put in the show notes. If you are a person that listens to Jordan Peterson, and let's say you believe 25%, this woman thinks you are mentally ill, and that you must be immediately treated and checked for depression, for antisocial behavior, for fascist tendencies. The liberal worldview leaves people apparently so fragile that they can't even imagine that someone could disagree with them. That there might be things in the world that are different than what they believe. That other people may choose to believe or do things that they can't believe, that they don't condone. And anyone who disagrees with them must be mentally ill, at least according to what she is saying. Any of you who listen to Jordan Peterson, and I encourage you to listen to Jordan Peterson, and here's why. Jordan Peterson is undergoing one of the biggest smear jobs by mainstream media I have ever seen in my life. What you read in the New York Times, what you read from people like Steve Horowitz, what you read from people in The Nation are complete gross exaggerations of what Dr. Jordan Peterson actually says. Is Jordan Peterson unoriginal? Yeah. But he says a lot of things that Jung and then Joseph Campbell said. He synthesizes psychology with religion, with libertarian politics and symbology, and puts it into a nice package and a friendly package that people are responding to. But none of the things that are these sources, like Carl Jung in the hands of a leftist psychologist, would probably be celebrated by this person. But if a conservative psychologist like Peterson is quoting the exact same thing, then it's bad. That's where they're falling apart. They're going so far into realms of insanity that you start losing people like libertarians. Now, all of 2016, I was being called a left libertarian, throw them out of helicopters, by not only people on not only by my co-hosts, but random fans of the show. It seems like you hate Republicans. You have for a long time talked about left-leaning policies. You're a suspect. Okay, fair enough. I'm anti-war. I believe that the government should treat gay people equally. I believe that government shouldn't be involved in marriage, but if it is going to be involved in marriage, then everybody should have access to that government institution. Okay. Civil rights have always been important. My work with Rupert's Kids and offender reentry has left me totally convinced that things like criminal justice reform must happen. End the drug war. These are traditionally left-leaning policies that many libertarians agree with. But I have been called a racist almost every single day on my Facebook by Wilson Allen. Friend of mine, known him for 15 years, huge Democrat, very progressive, old school Alinsky agitator in his 70s now. Wilson knows damn good and well that I'm not a racist, but he wants to gaslight and manipulate me by constantly claiming I'm a racist to frustrate me. So then I start retreating back into my identity of a single white male who's straight. And then you end up doing something stupid like posting a Confederate flag after a certain point. The agitation of the left is constantly pushing independents away from their message and is making people like me who are sympathetic to them completely unwilling to have a conversation with anyone on the left. Because it doesn't matter what I say or do. You might as well just post whatever you want on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, because it's never going to be good enough. In the hellscape that the left is creating for us, it's never going to be good enough. It doesn't matter how right you are on 50% of the issues that they agree with. You're always going to be a bigot, racist, homophobe. It doesn't matter. They're going to lie about you. They're going to create narratives about you that aren't true.
They're going to set you up.
They're going to set you up, invite you on their program, have awful discussions with you.
Ask you about Aleppo.
Right. It really is insidious. It's gaslighting, and it's wrong. And I'm getting tired of it. I'm not going to defend Roseanne, for instance. Roseanne did something that was 100% wrong, okay? So I'm not going to knee-jerk start defending every person that the left persecutes. But I do think that if you are one of the few people who are on the left that listen to this program, you need to understand that every time you cry wolf with racist, bigot, homophobe, write an article about Jordan Peterson that isn't true, you start taking people who are independent-minded and moving them further and further in the opposite direction of compromise rational discussion.
It creates the power of the alt-right that had no power before.
Right.
Because now people are seeing it as a way to defend themselves against the accusations of racism that they, you know, I'm not a racist, but I keep getting called one. So, you know, other people must be in the same situation. Let's band together and defend ourselves against it. Well, some of those people, they're racist.
Mm-hmm.
You're aligning yourself with people. So that's part of the problem, too, is they keep pushing and people start to change their behavior to say, okay, I normally would call out this as being racist. I would say that that's horrible, but now I don't want to.
I think Roseanne was a great example of this. I think conservatives, on the other foot, need to ask themselves, how far are you willing to go?
Mm-hmm.
Roseanne is a woman who ran with Cindy Sheehan on the Green Party ticket and was advocating for socialist Bernie-like policies in 2012, 2008?
2008.
2008. Here is a person that is a Hollywood leftist who's doing pills at night and saying racist crap on the internet, and you're defending her because she said something nice about Trump. Louis Farrakhan even slightly signals that he might say something nice about Trump, and conservatives start going, Louis Farrakhan's our guy. Oh, you mean the guy that is basically a mob leader who is extremely racist towards white people? Like, what is happening in the conservative movement that you have lost your minds just as much as the left has?
It's just like Roy Moore.
It was Roy Moore.
Same thing as Roseanne.
Oh, yeah, exactly right.
He got more support after that because they were like, they're attacking him, unjustly attacking him. We're going to go defend him. We're going to give him. He was not going to win that race.
And it was,
and he almost won because he got support from people because of that accusation.
And if you looked with a clear eye at the evidence against Roy Moore, the guy preyed on women. he was
some of the accusations may or may not have been completely 100% accurate, but there was no way that anybody could look at that and go, this guy is pretty cool. He's not doing anything wrong at all.
Yeah. It's not like
Roy Moore did not need defended and Roseanne did not need defended.
Exactly.
But here we are in the future.
And we could even go back to Bill Clinton, who made his little faux pas this week.
Right.
Being tone deaf to a question. But what he doesn't understand and what a lot of people on the left don't understand is that their defense of him back in the 90s prolonged that whole Me Too movement from existing. It basically, they defended the sexual harassment stuff that was going on so that everybody else was like, well, if he can get away with it, I can do it too.
And,
nobody wanted to say anything because then they were going to end up taking a hit on their guy. So they didn't want to bring it up. So this stuff could have been done 10 years ago. It just prolonged all of that.
Yeah.
We're still talking about kneeling for the anthem. People aren't letting things go anymore.
I want to
at all
go back to the right and start talking about the sins of the right, but this every side is doing what happened to Kathy Griffin. I'm going to defend Kathy Griffin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to warn you, but I can only do it on a podcast, and this is why podcasting is great. I tried to say this on Twitter and Facebook, and you would have thought I had said anti-Semitic slurs, because how dare you say something nice about a liberal?
Really?
Okay, we got to own the libs.
Wow.
Even if we're, as libertarians, we got to own the cons and own the libs.
And if you're a libertarian and you're saying that, you're not seeing things really properly.
Right.
Because we have to, you know, we have to stop what some of the liberals are doing, but the stuff that's happening on the right is not good either.
Sure. We have to be consistent in our values and principles and apply them independently. And if you apply your values and principles independently, this game of where do you stand on the issue of Trump, are you left or are you right, is going to be consistently applied to you. And it's very annoying.
Well, that was the one thing about the...
Even libertarians do
it. Which there's more answers than just that, yes or no.
Right.
That was the thing that got me
about
Roseanne.
It's a complex answer.
Right.
Somebody came out and said, Roseanne is just... The only reason Roseanne happened was because of Trump.
Right.
It's like... How does anything
everything
that she did have anything to do with Trump?
Everything.
That's the thing. It's like everybody's trying to tie everything to Trump.
Gas is $3
in the world of Trump.
A person saying Trump. Jimmy the Greek said something racist and lost his job in the 70s. Okay, this is not new, people. Quit acting like Trump invented everything. But here's why I want to tell you Kathy Griffin's story. Because you people, even the most level-headed, open-minded, independent-thinking audience in all of American politics, I would venture to say that this audience is the most free-thinking audience of any podcast in the world, okay? Because I demand that of myself. You guys demand that of me. I can't say a single fucking word without one of you people correcting me for something, even Jeremiah Morrill. You're being real Jesse Riddle right now, son. Like, this audience, I think, is so important at this time in history because you people need to be the ones who say the things that are hard but true. And that is going to make you enemies on all sides, even in the libertarian movement. I am loving Tom Woods' show right now because Tom Woods is as irritated with libertarians as I am. And he called atheist libertarians morons today on his show, and then my nipples got hard. It was great. Libertarians even fall into groupthink. All libertarian Facebook groups eventually devolve into some idiot going, I don't know why you're talking about this. It violates the NAP. Okay. Well, you can have a thought outside of the non-aggression principle, you little troglodyte. All right. Think for yourself. You can talk about Roseanne. Oh, it's just not that it doesn't involve the government. And so they have a property right to do whatever they want. Okay. I get that. But what kind of world do you want to live in? What kind of values do you hold? What kind of principles do you have?
We're getting ready to get onto the subject that I've been wanting to yell about for a couple of days now.
It is getting untenable. I'm seeing Eric July tweet out, human rights are property rights. Property rights are like the new taxation is theft. People are using that in ways that don't make sense. So I didn't question Eric. I'll see him at Porkfest. I'll ask him there. But I asked like Creighton, who's the smartest human I know, ANCAP, brilliant kid, read every philosophy book in history. I go, what does Eric mean by that? Human rights or property rights? Does it mean like if I own a Toyota, then I'm more of a human being? Or like, what is he? He's like, I don't even know, man. It's like these slogans then start getting introduced to the point that one kid on Instagram is arguing with Little Stone Aldridge, our social media director, saying, well, abortion is okay because it's a matter of property rights. You know, Jason Stapleton says all morality stems from property rights. Well, if I lie to Galt or to Reinhold, it's immoral. But I didn't steal property or rob them of property. Like, I don't know. I think we're getting intellectually a little bit too groupthinky, and we're not actually echoey chamber, and we're not actually thinking about what we're saying.
And they're trying to
making cogent arguments.
Yeah, they're trying to boil everything down to this one thing or this other thing. Like, everything's property rights or everything's economics. Economics will take care of everything. Great. So here's what we got an issue. We've got Roseanne who just got fired because she said a tweet. Well, that was their right to do that, right?
Right.
So how can people be upset about, oh, Roseanne got fired and that we shouldn't have these protests? People are protesting things and putting businesses, you know, out of business because of the protests. And libertarians get upset about this. Well, you shouldn't be able to do this. And that, why are you doing that? This is what people are asking for in the libertarian movement. They say, well, when we get rid of the government, all those social issues that everybody's concerned about are going to be resolved through, you know, whether somebody, if a business does this, then they won't get this person's business and they'll eventually go out of business and all that stuff. Well, isn't this exactly what you guys want? It's just happening right now.
Right.
Why are you upset about it? This is exactly what you're asking for.
We're trying to solve the culture war with economics.
You're never going to, because people,
how it works.
The problem is that a lot of the NCAPs have this thing where they say economics will take care of everything. Okay. And that's great. If people were always to look for profit motive and, you know, all this stuff will be taken care of, but people don't think that way. People have emotions. People are knee-jerk. People get scared. People react.
Are tribal.
Yeah, react wrong to things, or they defend people that they like and hate people they don't like, and that changes how they interact within a marketplace. And if you're not going to understand that and prepare for that or even think about that in your philosophy, then how are you any different than socialists who have a great idea, except that they don't understand about the human element and how human beings actually work, where it all falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't account for human nature in your philosophy, how are you any different?
Right.
You're not any different.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you heard that little rant, I'd love to hear send me an email at editor@weirdlibertarians.com because I don't pretend that I know everything about economics. I got a C in economics in high school. I'm a people person. I always have been. I struggled to follow economics. So if you can explain human rights or property rights to me, then please give it a shot because I'm totally mystified and everybody in Wall is mystified by that.
Property rights are dead. We know that from the Supreme Court ruling.
Yeah, keto.
No, this bakery.
The bakery?
They ruled in favor of the bakery, but not because of property rights.
We'll get to the bakery.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean they wouldn't rule in favor. They didn't rule in favor.
Basically said they wouldn't. Right,
Let's get to the bakery because I think it flows into the next subject better than Kathy Griffin. But we will get to Kathy Griffin because you people need to hear this. You need to hear what's going on because when you have these cultural arguments, you're contributing to this environment. And I think you need to hear what it's like to be on the other end of that. Not that I'm sticking up for what she did or what she said, but I think there's some questions in what that was that we need as people to answer about the society that we're contributing to. As a member of this society, as a person who is living and talking to people, you bear some responsibility for the way that you think about things and the way that you approach things. So you're saying that the government demands that? No. I'm saying that you have a responsibility to be a decent human being, and the government is not involved. So, this week, we've talked about the gay cake case, the Masterpiece Cakes case before, but in case you don't know, Jack Phillips owns a bakery in Colorado, and in July of 2012, Charlie Craig and David Mullins, a same-sex couple, went into Masterpiece Cake Shops in Lakewood, Colorado, with their mother, and asked to have a wedding cake. Now at the time, Oberfell hadn't happened yet. That was in 2015. And that was where essentially gay marriage was legalized everywhere in the United States. So they were flying to Massachusetts to get married, and then they were going to come back to Colorado and they were going to have a ceremony. And so Phillips basically says, "I'm sorry, I can't do that." So I went with a Vox explainer. Vox explainers do a really good job of giving you a bunch of facts. There is opinion, but they give you a lot of facts about these sorts of things. So you can then kind of pick and choose. So basically, Phillips is a baker, an artist, and the Colorado's non-discrimination law stifles his artistic expression. And essentially, Phillips told them that he serves LGBT individuals. He simply declines to create art that celebrates same-sex marriage, such as, from his view, a wedding cake. Each of Phillips' cakes, the brief stated, announces the couple's union as a marriage and conveys celebratory messages about that event. Since Philip is opposed to same-sex marriage, forcing him to serve a same-sex couple would, in his view, force him to express support for their marriage. Philip's attorney pointed out that he even offered to provide other kinds of cakes, brownies, or cookies to Craig and Mullins, showing that the issue was not that the men are gay, but he did refuse all wedding cakes to the couple, including a cake that were made for customers before and a nondescript cake.
That is a very important point. Remember
right,
that.
Showing that he was singling out gay people for refusing the service. The brief continues that before designing a wedding cake, Phillips meets with the couple to learn their desires, personalities, preferences, and wedding details. Jeremy Tedesco, senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom, previously wrote in an email. Then he sketches the design on paper, often multiple times, sculpts it into a shape, creates ornamental and symbolic details to place on it, and decorates it using artistic techniques like hand painting, airbrushing, and sculpting. Each wedding cake that Jack Phillips creates announces the couple's union as a marriage and conveys the celebratory messages for the event. He gets intimately involved in every one of his wedding cakes. And so he didn't feel that is. And now Masterpiece Cakes, I think it's closed now, but the logo is an art palette. There was a painting or a picture of him, you know, in like a Bob Ross attire or whatever. Basically, he considers himself a cake artist. And so the force of his argument before the Supreme Court was that I shouldn't be forced to make this cake because it violates my free speech. And so the couple were very hurt by this. I imagine that it was... Now, you made a face. Do you think that they're one of these plant-type deals?
My understanding is they went to several different people before and were all told that they would make the cake for them, and they looked for somebody who would do that.
I have not heard that, but I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, because that definitely exists. That's how the original case 10 years ago in Arizona with the photographer, that for instance, was one. So the couple were very upset, and they filed a complaint with the Civil Rights Division of Colorado, and they basically said that he had to bake the gay cake. And so it eventually went to the Supreme Court. Now, I haven't read all of it, but I think if you're interested in the details, Tom Wood's podcast today, which I will put in the show notes, was fantastic. It is an hour breakdown of every single part of this case. He reads through the opinion from all of the different justices. I cannot do as good of a job of breaking down the details of the ruling as Tom Woods. So I am going to simply send you over there to listen to that. And I think you should, because it was a really well done podcast. It was the best out of the probably dozen podcasts that I listened to about this, from Left, Right, Center News. Tom Woods had the best breakdown of exactly what was said in this case. And there are a ton of complexities to it, ton of different arguments. There was a previous decision by the Colorado, it's the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, where people basically went in and said, I want you to bake me bake me a cake that had the C word on it, that had, God hates fags, and they denied to do it, and then so they were sued, and I don't know. And so they ruled in favor of Jack's, but then they ruled against Jack Phillips. And they compare those two test cases, essentially. And so Kennedy wrote the opinion, and...
Ginsburg.
And Ginsburg...
She wrote the dissent.
She wrote the dissent. And Elena Kagan and Breyer attached themselves to the Kennedy decision, making it 7-2-2.
Very narrow.
But it's narrow in scope.
Yeah.
So, and legally. I fell for it. Too, because I was like, what does that mean?
I said something to Popat. I'm like, what do you mean by narrow? And he immediately, I was like, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like, it made sense to me to ask that question. I wasn't belligerent about it, right? So I'm just
And so narrow in scope means that it applies to this case, because I think what Kennedy is doing is Kennedy is reading the landscape and the rapidly changing view of the LGBT community and society, and hoping that this doesn't kind of come back up and that they won't have to do a broader
ruling.
It just
goes away.
That it goes away.
They don't have to deal with it.
Doesn't want to set any precedent.
Because, let me be honest. Let me give my opinion of all this after I kind of give you the facts, as usual. So the court found, as the record shows, some of the commissioners at the commission's formal public hearings endorsed the view that religious beliefs cannot legitimately be carried into the public sphere or commercial domain, disparaged Phillips' faith as despicable, and characterized it as merely rhetorical, compared his invocation of his sincerely held religious beliefs to defenses of slavery in the Holocaust. No commissioners objected to the comments. The court also argued that there seemed to be bias in the state government in favor of same-sex marriages, pointing out the commission ruled against Phillips in part on the theory that any message that on the requested wedding cake would be attributed to the customer, not to the baker. Yet the Colorado Civil Rights Division did not address the point in any of the cases involving requests for cakes depicting anti-gay marriage symbolism. Short, the court found that while the state's interest in banning LGBTQ discrimination could have been weighed against Phillips' sincere religious objections in a way consistent with the requisite religious neutrality that must be strictly observed, the state commission did not do that because it showed signs of hostility in the court's view towards Phillips and his religious beliefs. So the state could, in theory, prevent discrimination like Phillips, but it has to do it in a way that respects people's religious beliefs, which the court concluded the commission did not do here. Kennedy was explicit about it. In the opinion, the outcome of cases like this and other circumstances must await further elaboration in the courts, in all context of recognizing that these disputes must be resolved with tolerance without undue disrespect, recognizing without undue disrespect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to the indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. In short, they're kind of punting. So, to continue on a little bit. So, Phillips' brief at one point, the brief invoked a provocative comparison. African-American sculptors who have designed Latin cross-shaped sculptures for Lutheran churches would know that those same items express different messages if created for an Aryan Nations church event. Essentially, a black sculptor should not be forced to sell crosses to racists just because he sells them to Lutheran churches, given the context involved. The brief went on to say, other facts confirm that Phillips is concerned not about the sexual orientation of his customers, but the ideas that his wedding cakes convey. Phillips would decline to create a wedding cake celebrating a same-sex marriage regardless of whether the customer is a same-sex couple or heterosexual parent purchasing the cake. So, essentially, similarly, Phillips would celebrate a marriage between a man and a woman even if one or both spouses identified as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. So, he's saying, I don't care about the man or the woman. I care about the message of the cake. And I think that is true in many of these cases. Phillips, if you've seen interviews with him, the guy doesn't strike me as somebody who is a racist person, a bigoted person, anybody who, he has a very Bob Ross manner to him. I mean, he seems like a very gentle guy. And the Colorado Human Rights Commission, at one point, Kennedy, this was kind of what the thing that got the most headlines. Kennedy wrote about the commission, to describe a man's faith as one of the most despicable pieces of rhetoric that people can use is to disparage his religion in a way, in at least two distinct ways. By describing it as despicable, and also by characterizing it as merely rhetorical, something insubstantial and even insincere, the sentiment is inappropriate for a commission charged with the solemn responsibility of fair and neutral enforcement of Colorado's anti-discrimination law, a law that protects discrimination on the basis of religion as well as sexual orientation. So, the way that I look at this is that disagreement is not discrimination. What we are dealing with now is not the same as the civil rights era, for instance. You hear the civil rights era invoked in this conversation all the time. Jack Phillips was choosing to not, it wasn't even he wasn't even choosing to not associate with them. He was just choosing not to use his talents and produce a piece of speech that he disagreed with based on his religious views. The two men had the opportunity to go to probably half a dozen other cake bakers in the area and have the service rendered. If you were a black person in the South in the 50s, you didn't have the ability to have the freedom of association. You didn't have the ability to purchase goods. You didn't have the benefits of a full and free society in which you were participating, which you could should have participated. There were like zero people that were black that were registered to vote in Alabama. Full stop, like not a location, like the state. Okay. You weren't allowed to shop and do certain things. You were systemically oppressed, systematically oppressed. That is discrimination. The idea that that Jack Phillips disagrees with two people's choice isn't necessarily discrimination in my view. He is just choosing not to associate with them. He is choosing not to take their money. The two men, while hurtful, I'm sure that they are telling the truth and that it was hurtful. Sorry. Being offended, which I disagree with, I've said time and time again, name a time when you've been offended. You've been shocked. You've been angry. You've been hurt. You've never been offended. Offended is bullshit. These two men, in my mind, are no better, if not worse, than the person that won't sell them a gay cake. Because these two men are using the force of government. They not only did they walk away from that experience wanting to wreck Jack Phillips' life and business. They wanted to use the government to compel him to do something against his beliefs. They wanted to use the guns of government. They wanted to use the financially punishing power of the state government to force force him to do something he didn't believe in, that he was a conscientious objector to, and B, to wreck his life. Now, maybe they felt there was a greater good, but let's be honest, okay? Things are different than they were in 2012. It's 2018 now. I grew up in an era of intolerance towards LGBT people. I myself participated in that. I've told this story on the show. I had a friend in my friend circle that was gay. None of us knew it. And when I found out, I apologized to him for the awful things that we used to joke about as kids. Did we hate gay people? No. We just had never met one. We'd never had an interaction with someone who was gay. And I wish that he had told us. I understand why he didn't feel comfortable, considering how awful we were. But we would have become instantaneously more empathetic and tolerant towards that lifestyle that we didn't understand. But then Queer Eye for the Straight Guy comes out, and you see Carson Kressley and some of these other guys. For me personally, that was a moment where I was like, oh, these are people. Okay, I get it. You know, I really feel like that was an important moment. You know, I have a friend who I probably shouldn't tell that story. The new Queer Eye, for instance.
I heard the new one is good. I haven't seen it yet, but
no,
like.
There are.
I'm just gonna say it. I'm not getting. No, nobody's gonna get in trouble. I know people who have children who feel they're gay, watch the new Queer Eye, immediately empowered their life. That's awesome. You know what I mean? Like these cultural influences where you are exposed to people who are in a minority class, you go, wow, okay, those are. Those are people, you know, and that's really where I think that's why it's so insidious that we are constantly fighting about stupid things. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason that we are fighting about stupid things that are keeping us from connecting to each other on a personal level is that we have the force of government involved, that if I don't stop you, you're going to compel me with the gun of the government to do things that are against my conscience. And on the other side, you're going to fight back, and I need to stop you because then I need to control the government. That's why it's so important to not use the government to achieve social and political goals, because it is what inherently divides us. There, let's talk about the reality of 2018. The LGBT community is a minority of our population, but can we, with an honest, straight face, at this point in society, say that they are an unembraced class? Now, I don't live as a gay man. I don't secretly live as a gay man. I don't understand what it's like to be gay. Okay, and I fully understand that there are ways of living that I will never understand what it's like to be black, for instance. I don't understand what Harry goes through when he leaves his house and gets pulled over by a cop. Okay. Which is why it's really important for me to have those conversations with Harry, so I have some level of understanding of it. But this Pride Month, for instance, I've never felt like it is more celebrated in my lifestyle, in my lifetime. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I feel like we're at a moment of cultural acceptance. We're not at a moment of discrimination towards this minority class. There was a CrossFit gym here in Indianapolis that just went out of business today because Indy Pride, one of the members of Indy Pride and one of the members of the CrossFit gym organized a Pride workout. The owner canceled the workout and all of the employees quit. All of the members left the CrossFit gym and he had to close his doors today. Okay? That doesn't tell me that this minority class is being discriminated against. So why are we inflaming each other with a discussion about to me at this point, and maybe this is what Kennedy is trying to maneuver, what are we arguing about?
the problem is now is that a lot of people who are activists for the gay community
and on the
are trying to eliminate all aspects of anybody who disagrees with the fact that they exist as human beings. Right. So there's fringes of people out there who are still very anti gay. There's recently the article, there's a whole thing on Facebook about a person who wrote an article for Mises, who's an Austrian, you know, economics guy, who was also very religious, started a religious construction movement, and has stated publicly that he wants to capital punishment for male homosexuals, and they should be stoned because stones are plentiful, and we wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't cost a lot of money to do it that way.
Right.
Right. So that's his today, you know, that's how he feels. Gary North is his name.
Oh. Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, that's how he feels. And it's like, I think that they're trying to eliminate every single aspect of anybody having that opinion, but you're never going to, you can't force people.
Should Gary North have that belief? No. Is no. Gary North saying something that is absolutely crazy and anti-libertarian? Yes. Yes. Should Gary North have power? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Should Gary North be allowed to think what he thinks and say what he says? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because when we hear what he says, I immediately go, okay, Gary North is a recognizable name that I've seen many times over the years. I know not to associate with that guy now. I don't want any part of that guy.
Right. And that's why a lot of people are upset.
I would rather
why
know.
Why is he on the Mises? You know, he's been writing for Mises for years.
Right.
And people have known this for years about him. This isn't new.
Sure.
So it's like, so there's those people who are still out there that, and like I said, you're never going to, and it's same with racists. There's racists out there. You're never going to convince people not to be racist by putting a gun to their head and telling them stop.
Stop. Right.
Right. Sometimes those people just have to die out.
Yeah.
Social norms have to start to take place. But you also have to understand that even if there, let's say there's, you know, 5% of the population who are racist or homophobic, those sorts of things, those 5% of people are still affecting the lives of a certain number of people who are in that community.
Right.
And in a negative way. So how do we kind of combat that in the legal system to where we know that their rights are not being violated by those people?
Yeah. I mean, discrimination happens all day long.
Mm-hmm.
I discriminate who I want on this show. You know, I don't have people on who are wildly left or wildly right.
Mm-hmm.
I have a broad spectrum. But if I wanted to have only ANCAPs on, like Roger Paxton, Roger Paxton is incredibly discriminating on the Lava Flow podcast. He says I'm not a libertarian. He doesn't want me as a guest on there.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you can listen, but I don't want you to on the podcast. I won't let you can let the whore in church, but she's not going to preach. And that's Roger's right.
Yeah.
You know, and exposure to different people, different lifestyles, different ideas are important.
Exactly.
Because the Roper Phelps woman started out on Twitter. She's part of the Westboro Baptist Church. Used to hold God Hates Fag signs. Mm-hmm. Was the communications director for the church, got on Twitter and started interacting with people, started having lunch with gay and black and liberal people. Well, started to not hold the signs at the rally anymore. And she decided she couldn't be a member of the church anymore. And she realized she was wrong.
She did it on her own.
She did it on her own by being exposed to other people. We don't think on our own. And this is what I always tell people. I'm reading this book by I think his name's Alan Jacobs, How to Think, and he used that example. He's like, we don't think on our own. People who I think for myself. It's like, well, then you're a dumb person because the things that you think are inherently biased and probably wrong, and so you need to have discussions with people, and that's how you think. You think with other people,
right.
And other people shade and shape how you think about things. And free speech is so incredibly important. And if you're a libertarian, a Republican, a Democrat, an independent who is shutting down free speech in your private life, you may not be using the government to silence people. But if you are censoring people through violent, abusive behavior, then you're a problem. And let me be honest, fragile people like that have no sense of their own identity. And so they resort to controlling behavior because if they examine their own beliefs for too long, their world will crumble like Roper Felt.
They hide away in echo chambers.
Right.
They eschew anybody who says anything that's outside of their rhetoric, their propaganda, the things that they have come to believe is their basis for living.
And that's why everything's been dumbed down.
Right.
Because we've lost that community that's driven our thought and our critical thinking and everything that you've talked about since the beginning of the show.
People have stopped talking to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked about it on the show, and I did a Chris Spangle Show podcast about this. I went and had a meeting with young professionals who are millennials with the city council president. I was the only libertarian in the room. I was the only white male in the room. There was only a conservative in there. Everybody else was pretty much a Democrat, you know, talking about intersectional politics. Do you have any idea how libertarian all those people are? It was insane. And if you had polled, do you think that the people who are running the pro-DACA group or talking about intersectional politics or this minister of a black church downtown, if you had told me that those people were inherently libertarian, I would have called you a liar. Because the only libertarians I see are like the three of us, three white guys.
Well, we're the only self-identified. So
right.
They've done polls where if they give you the libertarian kind of views, like these are where the libertarian stands on these issues, right? So they say, okay, how do you believe on these issues? And they don't say the word libertarian. They don't give it a political agenda or name. They just ask those issues. 60% of the people in this country line up with libertarian views.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't think necessarily the reason why they agree with those issues is because they have a principle that they believe in and they are applying to all those issues. It's just that in their head, that makes the most sense.
Right.
Right. And so they're predisposed to that belief system. They just don't know what to call it. They just so they join the Democrat Party because they just can't stand the racists and the Republicans. Or the Republican people just can't stand those progressives who want to just, you know, do these stupid Marxist things. And so you get these people joining the other two these parties. They're not really embracing that ideology because there's no real ideology for either of those parties anymore. It's just we're against those people.
Right.
So as libertarians, if we can reach out to both sides and say, look, we know you don't like the other side because of these issues, and we agree with you on those issues. But you don't like your own side for these issues too, these other issues. We kind of agree with you on most parts. And that's what Gary Johns was trying to do.
He did it better than
in 2016. and
he
libertarians
brought
gave him so much junk for it.
Yeah.
Like, why are you reaching out to those people? It's because those people are libertarians. They just don't know it yet.
Right.
And we're trying to put the seed in their head. You put the seed in their mind. You say, hey, this is what it is. This is how we line up on the issues. We kind of agree here. And they go, okay, libertarians, maybe I agree with them on a lot of these issues. Let me look into it more. You're not going to be able to just turn on a fire hose and say, here's all libertarian beliefs, and you need to suck it all down before we allow you to vote for us.
No, it'll drown them.
I also think that when it comes to libertarians fighting the culture wars, they just align with the group that they left. Either they were right, and they just have some libertarian views, and so...
Or what I've seen is they completely flip the other way. I was actually a member of the Democratic Party trying to help get Dukakis elected when I became a libertarian. Let me tell you a story about that.
Dukakis.
Him in that stupid army hat and the tank. Yeah. Oh, my God. So, but I was just like so frustrated because I'm looking around going, what are they doing? I don't agree with anything they're saying anymore.
Right.
You know, I don't agree. I don't like what the Republicans are doing and saying. I don't like the wars and stuff that's going on. I really don't like any of that. But, you know, I just couldn't handle with what was being said on the left either. And I went home and I was staying with some friends. You know, we were roommates, and I was just frustrated. I said, why can't government just leave people alone as long as they're not hurting anybody? It's exactly what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And my roommate said, you know, it sounds like you're a libertarian. I'm like, what's a libertarian? I didn't have no idea. This is, you know, like 91, 92, maybe. I mean, the internet wasn't really thinging yet. And I'm like, okay, let me look into that. I looked it up. I'm like, yeah, I agree with this. I agree with that. This made complete sense of what I've been trying to say for years. And so now when I do, but the thing is, when I do a lot of my writing and stuff, it's just like so anti what the left is doing.
Right.
And if you go back and look at a lot of my writing from the last 15 years, whatever, it's mostly just attacking the left, because I'm so frustrated with what they did. The Democrats were kind of a little bit libertarian before they just allowed the progressives to come in and take over. Slowly, surely took it over. And that's how you do it.
That's what's happening with the Republican Party.
You have to slowly take over.
Right now.
You can't just overnight flip a switch. Yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah, it's the thing.
Populism right now.
Yeah, it's becoming populist.
They were leaning libertarian before Donald Trump. And now they're slowly...
You still have the neocons. You still have
true.
What I said, and I said this last time, I said if all the libertarian people in the Republican Party would just leave the Republican Party and join the Libertarian Party, the Republican Party would be over. Done. But if all the libertarians went to join the Republican Party, we would be silenced, ignored, ridiculed, but all of our work would be taken from us, so they could continue the neocons and the religious right and all the other stuff that keeps that party going.
Yeah.
So, anything? I don't want to cut you off.
No, you're good.
All right.
I'm rambling.
No, it's fine. So I want to talk about Kathy Griffin, because I think you need to know when we participate in these debates. Now, I've worked in PR, marketing, media, entertainment, the broadcasting business for my career, right? I can tell you that there are so many subtle ways to control public opinion, and there are many things that go on behind the scenes that you never see. So, like, the whole Russian bot thing, there is a shade of truth to that. Do I think that, you know, Trump arm wrestling Jesus or Hillary arm wrestling Jesus and spending $3,000 on a Facebook ad swung the election for Trump? No. Do I think that it's a building process, right? So public opinion is formed by millions of voices rallying around a certain point of view or an opposing point of view and participating in that massive discussion. So you never know who's kind of on the other end of that stuff. You know, Reinhold's not Reinhold's name. I mean, he could be fake news. We don't know.
I'm a bot.
Yeah. He could be a Russian bot. But I think
been accused of it.
And this is really long, so I'm gonna kind of blaze through it, but I want you to go and read the Twitter thread and put aside the bias that is Kathy Griffin. Listen, I can't imagine there's many people in this audience that like Kathy Griffin. I don't think she's funny. I think she's got an audience, I mean, because she's mean to celebrities that people want to be taken down a notch. I think she's probably kind of a nasty person. All right. But what level of treatment does she deserve? Now you can answer that. What levels of public discourse are there? All right. So let's have this discussion. So Kathy Griffin on March 31st said 1 year ago, it was the 1 year anniversary of her Trump photo. Where's all her replies? Hold on.
Ugh. We have technical difficulties. The Russians have hacked into Chris Spangle's laptop and deleted all of the replies.
Yeah, it's hard to like when you go to these tweets, and now it's showing like there's like 87 replies to this, but you only see all of the idiots.
How many people on there probably have you blocked?
Oh, I've been using the block
because you're on the list, because you know there's lists out there, right?
Really? No.
Oh, there's actually automated list people who will join into that will go into their Twitter account and automatically block anybody who's been put on that list.
Hmm. I mean, it wouldn't surprise us or surprise me.
And if you say anything that's outside the echo chamber, you get put on the list.
Right.
So clearly you listened to Sean Hannity and deleted all your data?
Is that what he did?
Is that what the problem?
No.
Oh, he made a joke about it, and the left took it all sensitive, You didn't hear about it?
I didn't, no. Surprisingly, Galt, I don't keep up with Sean Hannity news.
Oh, wow.
I just don't.
It's just Google. It's on Google. Facebook training's gone or going away, so can't follow that anymore.
What piece of new censorship did I just hear about? Oh, no, it wasn't censorship. It was the Google. Did you see the Google salad?
No. Thing? Oh, the egg. They took the egg out of the emoji on the salad.
Completely unironically, the emoji czar for Google redesigned the salad emoji to take out the egg to make it more vegan inclusive.
And of course, that offended someone.
Oh, everybody was pissed.
The egg is gone.
Oh my god!
But for real though, egg is good in salad.
I agree.
I like it.
I agree. I think a nice hard boiled egg in a salad is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, you what's been going on with you?
We're small talking now. Oh, not much. Yeah, I guess I can throw in an ad for Comcast Business.
Nice. Okay, so this link has a lot of it. So Kathy Griffin, as you know, on May 31st, put out that tweet where she was holding up the bloody head of Donald Trump. Now, she is talking about how she's going to post a lengthy, I mean, it's like 50 different tweets, where she essentially talks about her experience in the aftermath of that and what happened. Now, at the time, I criticized it. Basically, I just saw what I said, and it was, I applaud Kathy Griffin for finally helping us find the limits of anti-Trump hate. I was against it because I, like everyone else, assumed she was decapitating the president, and that's beyond the pale. And even as she later says, what was the point of the mask? It got lost in the mist mix. The image was inspired by Trump's sexist comments to Don Lemon about Megyn Kelly. So the mask photo was meant to be a play on those sexist comments, blood coming out of her wherever. I am no Megyn Kelly fan, but she made horrible racist remarks. But there's no doubt her comments about Trump's comments were sexist. I'd like to see what racist comments Megyn Kelly has said. She seems pretty vanilla to me. The photo shoot for the Trump mask photo was actually for new photographs for her headshot. We decided to do it last minute. My assistant went out and bought the Halloween mask and ketchup. That was the elaborate setup. Did I know the photo would cause controversy? Of course. But I thought it would be a 1 or 2 day thing. The point was to do something provocative in an attempt to keep the spotlight shining on his sexism. In my mind, that's the role comics are supposed to play. I think she's full of shit there. I think she wanted the controversy to promote her new tour. Because every article would include that she was going out on tour.
What I wouldn't say is something that necessarily comics are supposed to, but artists in general like to push boundaries and evoke conversation.
Right.
And that's certainly, I think, what she was trying for, too.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff on Google about Megyn Kelly being a racist.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe she's
racist.
She
said Santa Claus is white and you need to get over it, and so is Jesus.
Well, Jesus was probably Semitic and Mediterranean.
That's what she said. Jesus was a white man,
okay.
too.
Well, all right, Megan. Are whatever.
People white now? I don't know.
Santa is whatever. Never mind. I don't want to accidentally spoil it.
We want to get into the history of Santa.
Do you have children that listen? You don't want to spoil the secret of Santa Claus? Is that what you were about to say?
My niece will sometimes ask mommy if we can listen to Uncle Tiss. She's 4.
Okay.
So she needs to understand that Santa
so we shouldn't
is white
anymore.
is important. Yeah. Oh,
yeah, for sure.
I know. She goes, every time I curse, she goes, Uncle Tiss, a naughty word. She knows I'm not serious. So she writes, after my apology video, things started to calm down. But the next morning, Trump tweeted this, which started a process I was completely naive to, which I like to call the Trump wood chipper. On that day, I learned the power of the presidency and the power of the Trump machine. Immediately, the death threats started pouring in again after the first, but the more violent and serious than the previous night. The news networks broke into their programming to put his tweet up. The way I look at it is Trump is the most powerful news director and campaign director. A tweet from Obama was just a message. A tweet from Trump is an order to his millions of followers and the news media, and that day I was the target of that order. I don't think he is expressly saying it, but listeners, you're just going to have to trust me on this. I have run accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers based on personalities, and there is incredible power in that. There is incredible power in directing people to do things when you are running an account of that size based around personalities. If you have a big account like Tide, you're not really directing a lot of people to do stuff. But if you're a personality, especially a political personality, and especially the president of the United States and one as beloved and as divisive as Donald Trump, his Twitter is immensely powerful.
It's a call to action.
And it carries with it some level, some measure of force behind it due to his elected office.
I don't think he doesn't know it.
And of course he knows it. Yeah. There isn't any way that Donald Trump doesn't know exactly what he's doing when he hits publish. While Donald Trump has a right to fight back.
He's only giving his opinion. What's wrong with that?
Donald Trump gives up some of not comforts, some of the, when you become president, you give up some things. You're no longer a regular citizen who can shitpost on the internet. You're the president of the United States who commands the biggest military in the history of humanity and the biggest economy in the world, and you need to do some things that are wise.
Okay. Unless you got elected by an army of shitposters and you're the lead shitposter, and that is who you are. Shitposter in chief, you know.
But there's a human
that's
being.
That's their identity.
There's a human being. There's human beings on the other side of this stuff. Like, at what point?
But like Ryan said, I mean, they don't see them as people anymore. Yeah. That's how they can lash out at them.
But my point is, so what? We need to cut through that, and we need to go, what is the right thing to do?
What kind of society do you want to have? You want to have a society that's basically like it is now, where people are just lobbing horrible things at each other across this divide, which is getting wider and wider with people stuck in their own echo chambers? Or do you want a society where people actually talk to each other, have conversations, and grow as a people together and accept the fact that I don't have to hate you if I don't agree with everything you have to say?
Just because something is the reality, it does not mean that you have to advocate for it. Just because the reality is Donald Trump is a gross human being who is a shit poster and uses his Twitter for evil half the time, 90% of the time, like, it doesn't mean that we have to advocate for
accept it.
You can say, you're the president of the United States, you should bear some responsibility for hitting publish, knowing full well the effect of what that tweet will do to somebody. His goal, let's be clear, his goal was to destroy Kathy Griffin. Now, we know that's who Donald Trump is, but that's not an excuse, okay? And it's not a template to be copied, and that is the important point. We know Donald Trump's not going to change. He's a 70-year-old man who is never going to change his ways.
But do we accept it as the norm?
But do we accept it as part of our culture?
Or do we accept that, or do we point out that this is an aberration that should not happen again?
Right. So, venues started to cancel my shows, she writes. I don't blame them. They were getting bomb threats and threats from donors about pulling funding. I bring this up to point out a key fact. My shows weren't canceled because ticket holders, my fans, wanted their money back. The shows were canceled because the president of the United States and his family were offended by an image. I released and decided to unleash and they released an army on me. That's what's not right, and that's what I object to. I'm an adult. I can deal with the fallout. I've dealt with it before. Now, she did say that it wasn't released in the way that she was going to release it, that she had a reel of photographs and told her PR people, like, or the photographer to do whatever, and then the photographer basically like put it on TMZ. And then because it went out on TMZ, there was no context. There was no, you know, when you are presenting things to the world, you know, I've done tons of launches, and when you're doing a launch, you craft things in a certain way, because if you don't write the story and tell the story and set that template, then the world will make up the story for you. You know, if...
Oh, yeah. Imagine if you didn't edit the show and someone random person edited it for you.
It's that...
They would change your message to say what they wanted it to.
We don't know what Megyn Kelly was talking about, but you can take that quote out of context and make it assign whatever meaning you want to it.
They did it to Jordan Peterson.
And that's what these echo chambers are doing. They're making everything where you just see whatever you want to see in the pictures, and you like This Is America with Childish Gambino. He gave no context or no meaning to that video, and everyone gave their own meanings to it.
Right,
and it's there's a tipping point. At some point, we'll have to start thinking for ourselves instead of just in this group think this share like, the share button.
I think we hope that happens. I don't know if we have to. We can devolve into that kind of society.
Well, it goes back to the argument about the NFL. You're arguing things that aren't the truth. You're arguing things that aren't the reality. You're arguing things that Donald Trump has set the template. If you're out there posting on Facebook, dear listener, about whether or not Colin Kaepernick supports the troopers or not, you have been propagandized and weaponized by Donald Trump.
Well, the
because
news
you didn't
too.
Pay attention.
Well, the news media did it too. It wasn't just Trump, but he did it too. I mean, it's everybody. They immediately turned the conversation around from why, you know, taking a knee during the national anthem to you hate the flag.
Right.
Had nothing to do with the flag. It was the national anthem to begin with. And then it became the troops. And it's like, that has nothing to do with what was going on. But the news stories within a week of this coming out started talking about, oh, this is disrespectful to the flag. Trump started saying this is disrespectful to the troops. And the whole narrative got changed, because if you say something often enough in the news media or in politics, it becomes the truth. Just like the Russian attack, you know, hacked us and did all this stuff. You say it enough, even though there's no physical evidence that has been presented to the general population.
Right.
It becomes, this is the truth. And if you don't believe it, you know.
Yeah. The left media matters is just as guilty of it as Trump.
So I found
they get played by Trump so hard too.
A site with the whole thread. So two things in hindsight, jumping back, the point was sending the message about his sexism. Bullshit. I should have done a blow up doll instead of the mask. I allowed the message to get co-opted. The photographer asked me when he should put it out, and I told him to do it when he felt best, not releasing the, I shouldn't have released it without context. She was mimicking a Der Spiegel. When TMZ put the photo up, the S hit the fan. Death threats started flowing in from with critical tweets. Rosie O'Donnell called her and said, what if Daniel Pearl's mother sees this? Call me my naive, but I had not thought about that connection. So I deleted the photo and apologized. Then says, I'm a comedian. I should be allowed to say whatever I want. Like, there's a weird thing going on right now. Like, I'm a comedian, so I'm going to be a political pundit. And then when they get hit, I'm just a comedian. It's like, you have to decide. Like, you can either say political things or you can say funny things.
Anything you say, though, you should be able to take the response back for it, right? So if you're going to be an agent provocateur, then you're going to be pushing envelopes and pushing people's buttons specifically to get a reaction. How can you be upset when you get a reaction? You're never going to get a great reaction. It's never going to be, oh, we all agree with you. You're a wonderful person. Let's raise you up and make you president. That's not going to happen.
Okay, so she basically says Trump gives an order. Mm-hmm. People will say to me, well, you started it. He was just responding. Okay, I'm a comic citizen responding to the president. I was punching up and he was punching down. Exactly. And he uses his following to go after me, which was that an appropriate use of presidential power? I don't think so. Someone in the group said, you know, I don't agree with this concept of punching up and punching down. You can buy into that, but you know, there are thousands of listeners to this podcast. If I chose a random listener to the show and I just started a campaign of constantly berating them and telling you guys to think a certain way about a certain person, eventually that works. Mm-hmm. And you have 200 Twitter followers, you can't fight back. You can't fight back against someone who has a million
Twitter. Or you end up wasting all of your energy doing that.
Right.
And never can accomplish what you're looking to do anyway. It just wears you down so much.
Or that becomes what you want to do, is manipulation.
Yeah, someone like Melissa Donahue and I are pretty equal in terms of our platform. And Melissa Donahue, you have no idea how hard it is to really counter someone who has had a 3-year vendetta to make me look like a misogynist and a racist and a... You know, like, how do you go back and fight that? Like, how do you fight someone who is willing to just make things up about you?
You can't fight crazy.
You can't. And so...
Really, you just make it worse by trying.
So, I agree, you know, but I will say to Kathy Griffin, like, you knew who you were getting into a fight with. Mm-hmm. It's not like
the
Donald...
king of memes.
It's not like you don't know who you're getting into a fight with.
Yeah.
You knew the controversy was going to help your career. Then she says Melania released a statement. Now, this Melania didn't write any statement. Melania didn't even know she released a statement. It was the White House press shop trying to gin up a controversy and used all the different levers. If I want to put out a piece of content on any platform that I have 10 different levels of ways to reach people. And you have these different levers of ways to present things to the media or to the press or to a public, and you can pull out all the stops. You know, this wasn't a full court press, but this was definitely something where the White House team intentionally wanted to use this photo to get sympathy for Donald Trump.
And remember who was in charge of that at the time was still, I think, Steve Bannon, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Mm. So there you go.
I have a First Right Amendment to put out these images. People may not come to my shows. They may not buy my books, but I have the right. It's just plain wrong for the president to use his power to come after me or anyone else he is offended by. I agree. He can be offended. He can't use...
It's wrong for him to do it, but it's not...
Hold on. We will get to the wrong part and the use of government force. And this is where I really started to get irritated with, he didn't use blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's like, he's the president. Mm-hmm. Anything he says, there's an inherent level of force. If you work at a company and you want to please the boss, there's certain, this is one of those dog whistles, okay? This is one of those times where he's kind of hint, hint. but putting out
even
a...
hint, hint. He says it outright.
Right.
To do stuff. Like he told, you know, when he was running for office, he's like, I'll pay your fines for if you go punch him. And then you'll punch him.
Yeah.
You know?
Kathy Griffin has a right to say it. Absolutely. Without fear of any kind of prosecution or persecution from any
or
government
physical
agency.
Physical violence.
Or physical violence. She has absolutely every right to say it. But you do that, you're probably going to get some shows canceled. There's consequences to what you say. So you have to be aware of that. I'm not a total free speech absolutist, but I'm as close as humanly possible. Like if you're a free speech absolutist, for instance, child pornography airing on television is someone's right to free speech, and if you want that taken down, then you are violating their right of free speech in the private sphere. Like, there has to be certain limits and boundaries. There has to be some guidelines, right? You guys need to talk now.
Well, I mean, there's boundaries in that, in the fact that child pornography, of course, is a violation of the right of the person who's involved in it.
I agree.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it's not a free speech issue, though. Child pornography.
You're not guaranteed a platform either, right? I mean, nobody's guaranteed to say, okay, I want what I want on television. No, it's a private company, and they don't want to air it, and they're not going to air it. So you have a right to say what you have to say. You don't have a right to a platform to say it.
Right.
Right.
So The death threats were coming in at a rate we couldn't keep up with. The FBI told me there were real credible threats against my life. I had to hire security, and people were calling my poor 97-year-old mother, threatening her life. She then goes on to say, and this is the part that was shocking to me. After I posted that apology video, things calmed down. In the midst of all this, bomb threats were being called into my shows that had already been scheduled. I later learned the bomb threats were robocalls. So she says robocalls were being used. People were using machines to systematically and constantly call the phone numbers of the venues that were holding her comedy shows. If that's true, that's beyond the pale abuse. Like, that is crazy. Who was putting those together?
That's who planning. That's somebody being angry and calling up and saying, ah, it's
right.
Somebody who's like, put something together.
That's creating an environment.
Premeditation.
Exactly right. And that's a huge, huge, huge thing that nobody's ever going to look into, but somebody should.
Well, and then you have to go back to who was in charge of the White House at the time and who does a lot of robocalling.
Absolutely.
You have to wonder.
It
may not have been followers at all. It could have been coming straight out of the White House. Check the area code of those robocalls, you know?
Right. The shows were canceled because the President of the United States were offended by an image and decided to unleash an army. So I guess it comes down to, like, at what point are you, as a Trump supporter or a person who hates Kathy Griffin, at what point are you willing to say enough? Like, what's your limit? And I think, like,
I've seen it.
There's no limit.
It's like this guy in Virginia running for Congress who is the child molester. Like, let's just be honest.
Trying,
like,
to say he's a libertarian, too.
Yeah, he claims to be a neo-reactionary libertarian and
the
an
libertarian
ANCAP.
Party said they kicked him out years ago. Did right. Never stand for any office for them.
I was trying to, my boss and I, as we drove to and from Detroit, listened to a ton of talk radio, and Glenn Beck was on at that point, because we were just, like, listening to, like, how do other people structure their talk stations? We were listening to Glenn Beck, and he was talking about hebephilia, and I was so mad that I knew that term thanks to our vice chair. Like, I read this story, and I just kind of go, never mind. But, you know, it's funny when we're just like, all right. He's like, maybe I'm not going to listen to this show anymore. So, you know, she did the press conference. That was a mistake. I won't bore you with any more of the details. But I'm saying, and Beck in this segment was making the point of, where's your line? Mm-hmm. So they started out, here's a candidate. Let's talk about his stance on taxes. He's for low taxes, if not none. All right, great. Where does he stand on this? Oh, that's great. I agree. Where does he stand on this? Awesome. Where does he stand on child molestation? It's okay. Oh, okay. Where does the Democrat stand? They're against child molestation, but against all that other stuff. So at what point does this guy's better than the lib, this guy's better than the statist, at what point are you going to draw the line? You know, and this guy's going to get votes. There's going to be...
How many people voted for Trump, and maybe he got elected just for that concept of, you know, we just don't want Hillary in.
Yeah.
So we'll take anything other than Hillary. Well, you got anything.
Yeah, and Trump is not... Certainly not in this guy's. There's no moral equivalency between these two guys. But, like, I thought it was a really salient point.
Mm-hmm.
In these cultural conversations, where's your line? Yep. Are you going to stick up for the Hollywood liberal drug addict when you're a Christian conservative baby boomer? Mm-hmm. Are you going to vote for the ANCAP who's running for Congress despite the whole child molestation thing? Well, he's better than the other guy. Are you going to allow Kathy Griffin to have robocalled death threats to her venues to destroy her career just because, I don't like Kathy Griffin. She seems pretty liberal. Like, yeah. At what point are you willing to draw the line?
A lot of those Trump followers who are into that are just, they want to see the left taking down a peg. Right. They want to see these celebrities who are trying to preach them and say that you should think this way and you should think that way, and they don't agree with it. And they want to see that cut down at the knees, maybe not literally, but maybe some of them do. And that's just scary, is that they will go along with this right up to the point where it finally hits them that they've gone too far.
Right.
And I don't know where that line's going to be for a lot of those people, because I think they have a lot of anger and frustration that they're trying to get out, and it's being fueled and for political purposes, right? It's being tapped into. It's being fueled. It's being echo chambered up and ratcheted and ratcheted and ratcheted. So at what point do they go, we have gone too far?
Right.
I'm afraid to see where that line is, because I don't think it ends without violence.
If we break out of
already
this...
already past the logic line.
Mm-hmm. No, we're way past the logic line, and libertarians are as guilty of it as anybody. Mm-hmm. I watch the libertarian movement sometimes, and I just go, I don't know why I'm here, because I thought libertarians were the rational ones. I thought they were the ones who applied independent thinking to everything. And then, you know, you say, I don't like the way Ron Paul handled that whole LP convention thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, secret screenshots being released today just prove everything that the other side was saying was correct. And
I didn't see that.
You all of a sudden, I don't think we should listen to We Are Libertarians. That Spangle guy's suspect. He said something about Ron Paul that was suspect. Like, okay, I don't want you here. I don't want you listening to my show. Don't listen. If you're a stupid person who can't think for yourself, I don't want you listening to the show.
Yeah, and if you're not willing to actually have a conversation, let people maybe be wrong. Okay, so maybe you were wrong about what you said.
Right.
Maybe you were right.
Sure.
But if you're going to say, oh, that person said this about this this person who I – where did the idolization come in?
Right.
In this whole thing. It's the same thing with Trump. People are now idolizing him as this person who's going to lead this, that, and do it. That's not leadership. That's lionization.
Cult behavior.
Did you see the time cover? The new one today?
I haven't seen the time.
Oh, he's looking in the mirror, and he's got his suit on, and his back to the cover.
Oh, really?
And he's looking in the mirror, and in the mirror, it's him dressed as a king. That's the vision they want you to see of him, though.
That's what always irritated me the most is when I was trying to tell Democrats, I'm like, don't give Obama all of this power, because he's not getting his stuff through Congress, mm-hmm. so we don't want to give him more power. Give him more power. I said, what are you going to do as soon as somebody comes? And I wrote this years ago. I said, what are you going to do when the next person comes into office and he's maybe a Republican and he's doing something you don't like? You've just given him all of this power. What's going to happen then? And they're like, it'll be fine. We're not going to. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You're not going to like it. And they don't like it.
Yeah. No.
They don't like it.
Yes. Donald Trump
made a mistake.
Maggie Haberman nailed this.
They don't recognize it. That's the irritating part, is nobody is coming to grips with, we shouldn't have done this. This is our fault. Right? They're just like, as long as you elect good people in there, they can be kings.
Just maintain that.
As long as it's
them.
The right people. Yeah. But when you get the bad people, we should never have bad people in there. I'm like, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's why the Founding Fathers said we don't want them to have any that much power, because we know that occasionally somebody's going to get in or he's going to be a jerk. So don't give him that much power.
I'm just not going to participate in the thought crime game. Like, if Donald Trump does, there is no doubt that Donald Trump sees himself as Maggie Haberman outlined, which is he used to go in, hang out with all these mobsters, hang out with all these tough New York guys in the 70s.
That's how he made his living.
That's how he thought he was going to run the White House, because he was the king of the he was the head of the hill. You know, he has no understanding. So I'm not down with that. Do I like the extra money I get in my paycheck? You're damn right I do. Mm-hmm. There are things that are good
and
bad about
it. Supreme Court justice that we got.
Yep. Neil Gorsuch.
I'm surprised. I'm completely surprised. I don't know if he was intending to pick somebody that was actually really libertarian in thought, but it looks like he did. Now, we still have years to find out, but I'm happily kind of surprised.
The people who are the most shrill about Donald Trump are the people who got involved in politics because of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And they're the people who know the least about politics. They're the people who are brand new. People who are brand new to politics are usually the most shrill, because they're the most insecure about their beliefs and ideology. If we were to get into a real conversation and a real debate, you're not going to be able to hold your own. So I better employ tactics to make sure that we don't ever actually have a real conversation, because you might accidentally convert me and shake my worldview. You know, and that's just like – us old timers need to kind of sit the youngins down and go, this is not how we do things in this country. You know, I'm not going to completely 100% fall in line behind Trump. Will I say when he does good things? Yeah. Like Neil Gorsuch is a good thing. And by the same token on the left, do I think equality and justice are important? They're incredibly important. But we're not able to have those conversations because you're so focused on calling me a racist. You know, because I'm not a Democrat.
Yeah.
Like,
they're not even listening to what you're really saying.
No. Nobody's listening to anybody. It's like everybody's standing in a circle screaming at each other with soundproof headphones on. And it's just like not productive. I don't want to participate. No thanks. I'll just do my little podcast over here. You know, and even if the libertarians are going to be like that, mm-hmm. I'm going to take the libertarians that are like me and the people that are thoughtful, and we're going to go over here and we're going to have our own little thing like we do.
We eat tea and crumpets.
Eat tea and crumpets. Mm-hmm. And watch the world burn.
Replace Donald Trump with Ron Paul in that conversation thing you just said.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, it's for sure.
How many people are in a party because of Ron Paul who never been in politics before or new to it or trying to get pulled into by this new caucus?
Right.
That you can't have conversations. That's the irritating part.
Right. All right. Well, I feel like we had one. Any other things you guys would like to say about this before we wrap up?
I have a lot to say, but I understand your voice is probably going. So
yeah, you can talk. I don't have to.
Well, I kind of wanted to go back to the cake thing, because I have a little bit to question about. Now I'm not going to be doing a lot of preaching at this point, but I want to say, at what point was Gary Johnson right?
Because I don't think at all.
What do you think his position was?
Well, in listening and watching that debate with Austin Peterson and John McAfee, where he said he kind of like sheepishly said, "Yeah, I think they should have to bake the cake." To me, that was the moment when that campaign really lost the heart and soul of everybody. Because even if he was trying to say, "You as a decent person should bake the cake," but the government shouldn't be involved, it didn't come out that way.
Right, but remember, when he answered that question, as soon as he did that, Austin Peterson jumped in and never gave him a chance to expand upon what he was saying.
Sure.
He did come out and say the next day what he was saying there.
You're explaining, you're losing. That's how politics works.
Yeah, true. But
Austin's a great politician.
But let's go back to what was being said, though. His statement the next day or whatever on Facebook was that hundreds of years of jurisprudence have said that there is a specific type of, like, when you open a business, you have an accommodation that you have to follow through, right? So if somebody comes in and says, "Hey, I want to buy something," you can't just, you know, say, "Well, you're black, get out."
Right? Generally, you're going to offer, if you offer services, everybody can access those services.
Right. So what he was saying was, if you make a cake and you have, like, 25 cakes sitting in a little thing, and somebody comes in and picks one up and goes over and says, "I want to buy this cake." You go, "Okay, I'll sell them the cake."
Right.
But if you go to them and say, "Well, you're black, so no, you can't, I'm not going to sell it to you." Right. That would be not allowed under the law.
Common law.
Right.
Basically. Right.
But if you would come in and say, "Hey, I want you to decorate this cake in a certain way," then the person has a First Amendment right to say, "No, I'm not going to do that." And that's what he's always stated, is that he always felt that was never needed to be said, because decorations, services, those sorts of things are covered under existing First Amendment law.
Let me quibble with common law. Why, if I want to discriminate people from transactional business, why am I not allowed to?
Because it's wrong.
Of course it's morally wrong. But why is it legally wrong?
Why are all our laws written? Because someone said something's wrong.
Right.
And that's why they wrote the law.
So let me get into that a little bit. So if you go to the point to say that, let's say somebody walks into a Walmart, goes back and buys a bike off the back of the rack, takes a bike and goes up to the front, and they say, "Well, I'm not going to sell it to you because you're black." All right. do libertarians support that as being part of society, acceptable part of society?
Sure. I don't.
No.
Okay. But that's what you advocate for when you bring this up in conversations, because everybody else hears they're bringing back no colored allowed signs, and that's why they're saying this.
I get the messaging problems right. with it. I'm sure there's plenty of people who listen to this podcast who are not here at this point in it because they turned it off and said, oh, they support bigotry, which is not the case.
Right.
It's what role does the government play in that?
Right. Now, most businesses, when they sign up to open up as a business right now, they have to open up a business license. They get certain protections from the government, too, at that point, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
So they get protections from, like, if you go after that business and you run it in, you know, you sue them to the point where they have to go bankrupt, it's not affecting the person individually. You know, so they have protection from that business.
Right. It's corporate protection. Right.
While they're getting that protection, isn't there an expectation that they follow a basic level of entrance into the marketplace for everybody based off of race, color, and gender?
Yeah, but I'd argue why should business licenses and corporations
they shouldn't
even exist?
But that's my thing is we should be focusing on getting rid of, as libertarians, getting rid of that sort of stuff first, so that when somebody goes after and says, okay, I'm not going to let black people into my business, that when the backlash comes, it doesn't just affect that business, it affects that person. It's a real decision they have to make, because they're affecting some other person when they make that decision to not allow them into the store.
Right.
So as libertarians, I think we need to be focusing on getting that stuff taken care of first and seeing if the issues that those laws were brought up to fight with before don't come back. So you could have communities that, let's say they have 5 grocery stores in there and they get all their food from these specific suppliers. If those suppliers were to get together and those business owners were to get together in one of the clubs that we talked about beforehand,
mm-hmm.
and agree that we're not going to sell to anybody of color. Now, this we're talking this 10, 15 people.
A cartel, basically.
Yeah, a little cartel.
A racist
that runs,
cartel, right.
That could happen.
Sure.
So how do you fight against that? And it doesn't necessarily be black people, but people aren't the most logical and free-thinking people in the world. What happens if there's another terrorist attack? Now this anti-Muslim thing that's already kind of swirling anyway ratchets it up real quick. Now you're impacting a whole society out of fear-based thought processes by human beings. When do we as libertarians say we need to protect the rights of those minority people, those individuals who are being unable to enter the free marketplace fairly? Right. Mm-hmm. Is that a right that we should be protecting or not as libertarians? The
freedom
the
of
free
entry?
Entry into the marketplace.
Yeah. Unrestricted.
Well, so here's the part of what I've been thinking about this discussion. And I totally zoned out, so I didn't hear your question. So you can repeat your question, or we can talk about what I want to.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just as libertarians. As libertarians, where do we? Is there a right to free entry into a marketplace, an inalienable right? That if we're going to focus our society around the market,
but it's a functional exist. I mean, it's not a matter of, like, in a libertarian society, for instance. Like, the government can have business licenses and control who has access to a market. That's part of the problem with it, is that you can use the force of government to compel those business owners to act in a way that is against their conscience. Mm-hmm. In a free market society where you don't have licensure, I can't say that word, you don't – it's not a matter of – allowing entry. It's a matter of, does the person have the capital to set up a shingle on the outside and join the marketplace? The marketplace, people in their own economic interest will then choose whether or not that person is a worthy member of that community, that marketplace.
But is it always economically based thought processing? It's emotional. It's sometimes fear-based.
No, but I would argue that people, by and large, will always choose their economic benefit over the good of society. So McDonald's, for instance, just announced today that people order more food at a kiosk, and so therefore they're going to eliminate most of their cashiers and implement the kiosks.
But then now, you also have ABC, who took their number one show that they haven't had those rate no broadcast that company had those kinds of ratings for years,
mm-hmm.
and dumped it because of one tweet. Instead of finding a solution, that wasn't an economic decision. That was, we are not going to be that type of company. We don't care about profits. We care about this ideology.
They know that with the organized left, when Move On, with all these companies,
it's
going to cost you far
more to fight that. And keep
I don't agree. I think ABC, the people running ABC, are part of that thought process. They are whole in that they don't care about economics as much as they care about imagery and what they represent as a company.
There's definitely a transactional person in the room going, yeah, it's going to cost us $60 million, but it's going to cost us $100 million if they'll boycott all of Disney if they don't. If we
all
don't
they,
do
all they had to do, all they had to do for Roseanne was say, okay, we're suspending her for 6 months,
right?
And she has to issue an apology. It could have been done, and they could have still had that show on. They did not want that. They wanted to make an example of her and say we're willing to. They got rid of
the ratings were
the
also,
other show.
The ratings were also dropping for that show. So I still argue that it's 50-50. I get what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying, but I also think that at the end of the day, people are transactional about their money. And because economic resources represent prehistoric parts of our brain where it's security. It's, you know, we don't worry about the food that's in our belly necessarily for the most part, but we worry about the ability to put food in our belly next week.
Yeah, but think about this. If you have a fear that you're going to be a victim of a Muslim blowing up a building,
mm-hmm.
would you pay a little bit extra money to go to a company that ensures that no Muslims are allowed in that building?
Yeah.
That's a thought process that people have to make. I mean, I'm not arguing at all for we need government regulations for all of this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But I think we have to think about some of these edge cases.
No, I got a text message from
the edge cases really control the markets, though. Those edges are never going to be able to control.
But they still affect actual real people.
No.
And if you're not protecting minorities.
And I do think that we're at a point where edge cases, meaning, you know, the things that are at the far ends of a spectrum, have in some ways, because of our echo chamber online, have become the norm for people. I think people think that there's probably, you know, I'm listening to Vox the Weeds podcast on this cake thing, and I about hit a pylon as I'm driving because they said, you know, civil rights was insidious because it was systematic and they were robbing people of their free association.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the gay cake issue, we're 10 years away from where that was happening, and we don't know necessarily what the landscape of wedding vendors are, but it seems like this is probably a one-off, so it seems like kind of an overreaction. Now, this was Vox, mm-hmm. okay, which is a left-leaning. I couldn't believe that they said it. I think it was in the gym. I about died of heat stroke. Yeah. But my point being is that those edge cases, like the gay cake thing,
mm-hmm.
I think people think that people who don't really pay attention think that everybody out there is just being discriminated against and nobody's getting a gay cake.
Right.
When in reality, it's one guy who's probably a decent person telling two other decent people, I just don't want to do this, man. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I'll make you cookies. You know, and then it just like gets picked up by that grist mill where it's just like, mm-hmm. now he's the devil, they're the devil. You know, everybody in the world is not getting gay cakes. And in reality, we're talking about one person, one situation. Out of millions of transactions a year,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm sure there's millions of people getting gay married every year, and they have cakes, and we don't have this overwhelming. That's why things like the Chicago shooting stand out. The mass, you know, the mass shootings too are part of that kind of. I don't know what it is. Is it the?
It's like the public bathrooms too. I mean, that was brought up. That's
right.
Gary Johnson was like, "Why are we talking about this? This is such a non-issue."
Meanwhile, Social Security in 8 years mm-hmm. is not going to be functional. Like,
it was shocking.
We are going to by the next decade, in less than a decade, we're going to have bankruptcy talks, or you're going to have to majorly cut
inflation's going
things
to
by
hit.
20. Yeah, it's we got real problems.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's
but
enough.
Instead,
of this.
We spent a whole episode talking about whiners on the internet.
I think it matters because I think it's what people.
It is.
I think it
yeah.
really is affecting got, people's yeah. happiness.
It's like this, mm-hmm. like the conversation I just had. Now, I agree on both sides of the issue. I mean, I fall back and forth through that whole thought process because I don't think it's a done thought process in the libertarian community, and definitely not myself. And I don't think anybody should make that as a, it's got to be this or it's got to be that. Let's have those conversations.
Right.
And that's what really irritates me most about echo chambers is that you go outside of what somebody thinks in a conversation, even if you're playing a devil's advocate role, which I do a lot. Just to say, well, what about this? Just try to push people to think about their thought process and say, or their philosophy and say, okay, have you thought about what happens here? What have you thought about what happens here? I mean, I go off on a whole rant about the homeowners association thought processes and the libertarian community,
sure.
but it's those conversations that people try to shut down because they don't. It's almost like they don't want to have their thought process challenged,
right?
They don't want to think outside their box or what they've been told or what they've been trained. Because how many times you have a conversation with somebody and you start pushing them on those little things and you start getting to them a little bit and they just can't respond. They don't mm-hmm. know how to defend their own philosophy. So they say, oh, go read this link or go watch this video or go read this book. And it's like, you should be able to explain it to me. You should be able to have this conversation. If you can't have it, admit that, hey, I don't know. I'll have to think about this. And then go do that and go think about it yourself, not – well, you're just wrong, and
they
I don't have
down.
The time to yep. explain it to you, so you just go read this.
And listen, I'm a thin-skinned person, and it's why I don't run my own Facebook page at this point, like, because like, I have to let Stone and Phyllis and Jake and you, like, I have to let you guys post and run it. Like, Stone does a great job of managing our social accounts now, because I just look at it and I just start getting mad at people and calling them idiots and then drive the numbers down. You know, like we're up 1,000 in like a month because Stone's running it as opposed to down 500 because I'm running it. And it's not that I'm it's what I do for a living too. It's just, I just get so irritated.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I find myself somebody who is very level headed, who can sit here and have that conversation with Reinhold where, like, I'm trying to understand what he believes. He's trying to understand what I believe. I don't know that I necessarily agree. We're trying to figure out where the edges of the conversation are. You know, but online, it's like, don't you disagree with me? You know, like, online, it's like, you know.
You're just stupid.
Because.
You're just a statist.
It's like, I just post things and I don't. I mark unfollow on it, so I may or may not. I have to be in the right emotional state to read comments. Because people don't even go and read it. They don't go and read or watch or engage in the content that you've read that you
Discord,
think is interesting.
Discord is better.
They don't even read it. They don't even open it.
It's better because you can have kind of a chat. And I get into those conversations in the Discord, and I try to do the edge things. And there's a couple guys in there that I can tweak pretty well, you know. And we get into some really long conversations. But at least they're conversing. They're at least having the conversation. It may not be the best form, and
because they know at the end of the day, on some level, you respect them. Trying to embarrass them. You're not trying to lower their social rank. You're not like, and that's really what it is.
We're still going to be friends afterwards.
Social media is just all a vanity play on people's social rank in society. Everything is about trying to look bigger than you are, so you can attract women or men. So you can propagate the species. You can. Money is important. It's like, why does everybody on Tinder?
Yep.
A friend asked today. She says, "Why does every guy put that they like travel on their Tinder?" I go, "Because every girl puts that they like traveling on Tinder, and so every guy wants to show that they have enough disposable income to take them on trips. So they'll be interesting, and then they display that they have enough income and resources to be a potential mate. That's all it is.
It's meow meow beans. Do you ever see Community?
No.
Oh, in Community, they do an episode where they a social network comes in to test at the community college, and it's Meow Meow Beans. Uh-huh. But you, basically, you rank everyone in the school out of five Meow Meow Beans, and then they create a class system where the fives rule and the ones are, you know, just like right. that. And you only can go in certain areas of the school if you're ranked this high. And it's you should watch it. Community's right. great, but that's mm-hmm. what you're, that's what it's.
Well, and China's doing something like that right now. Where that you can
that's
actually
social credits.
Yeah, you social credits wow. and you vote on people. And that was actually in a book I was telling you about before where he planned that out. A new society was going to crop up in is a book called Daemon, Daemon. So it was, the person died. All these things woke up, took over the country basically, and implemented this new system where people had these virtual augmented reality glasses on. And you would see somebody, and you could vote them up or down based off your interaction with them. And then when you saw this person, you would see their ranking. And you know whether or not to stay away from that person.
People
or
in
not.
China are...
And now they're doing it in China.
It's been going on. We talked about it at the beginning of it here on the show at some point like years ago. Mm-hmm. And people now, because of the social credit system, are not getting jobs. They're not getting mm-hmm. access to transit. They're not getting... I mean...
You can lose your job for stuff you say on Facebook. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why I use Reinhold.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I use agent.
Because back in the day, I was very conscious of that. I have companies I work for. I don't want have to worry about that association. You can be turned down for jobs based off what you say on social media. That's part of the process now, and it's accepted as part of the process.
I just decided to make my own job, and so I could say
that's the best way to do it.
Because it's like I want to say whatever I want to say, and I still, even though because I'm employed at a respectable institution. Like if I didn't have a day job and I did this full time, you people wouldn't believe what was coming out of my mouth and Twitter.
Before Facebook, we didn't have that though. Yeah. You know, like we had a sense. I feel like the internet had a sense of being anonymous. You could be anonymous on the internet, and now that's kind of gone.
But you look at the people who are robocalling Kathy Griffin. It's like they're still that still exists. But I personally don't like anonymous. I think. Mm-hmm.
Why Jeremiah doesn't use the Discord.
It's why I'm not a big fan of the. It's not that I'm not a big fan of the Discord. It's that
you only code names.
I want to build a relationship with somebody. I'm a relational person, and Jeremiah is too. And so when you're in a group of strangers and you don't know who anybody is, you can't really build a relationship with somebody. You can have fun and interesting chats with them, but you're not gonna like go to their funeral if you will remain anonymous the whole time. So, and for me, We Are Libertarians is about building a community of people who have shared values. We're libertarians. We're striving for decency. We're striving for these certain things. And so, and we're also, you know, things like Liberty and Chill, we've just put the finishing touches on a couple things, and I'm going to start rolling that out because I want that to be a social club for people. That idea of the Rotarians from 100 years ago.
Yeah.
I want Liberty and Chill to be that for you and your local community where you're inviting people regardless of race, color, creed, political persuasion, religion. Like if you just want to come have fun and meet some people and talk about stuff in a safe environment, then that's what this is about. And
it's an inclusionary club, not an exclusionary.
Exactly right. You know, and by and large, it's going to be libertarians congregating with each other to find some purpose and meaning in social activity. And
well, I was at the one a while back, and a friend of Harry's was there. I think mm-hmm. he might have been a friend of yours. But he was full-blown progressive Democrat.
Right.
And he was just hanging out with us, and we got a great conversation at right. that. And so it doesn't have to be just libertarian. It just has to be people who are willing to hang out with cool people who are open-minded, who are going to have conversations, but they're not going to be judgy. You know, as long as that doesn't become it stays that way.
Oh, man. I better stay away from these events. I've never been to one, but I'm going to judge everyone if I go.
I do. You don't tell them that you're judging.
They're openly judging.
They came
quietly.
They came to this bar event and they're drinking seltzer water.
Shut your mouth.
Judgment.
Shut your mouth. No, we find meaning in other people. And we have let... I think part of it is the...
Are we losing empathy as a society?
Yeah. I think Ayn Rand and objectivism, like if I ever meet somebody who's an objectivist, I try not.
Remember Lauren?
Yeah.
Rumpler?
Oh, yeah.
You met one. You worked with him.
I know. I dated one. That's why I have this bias against him. I wouldn't say date. Just had my heart ripped out. Fine. Yeah. I'm over it.
I think we lose empathy on the internet. Because you're not face to face with someone. Yep. So you're not constantly reminded by the fact you could see them that they are a human being. You almost start thinking, oh, this is a computer game almost. This is, you know, AI. These are people. They're people. It's amazing that can actually happen where you can be talking to somebody online and completely lose the reality of them being an actual human being that you're talking to.
Yeah, it's episode 136. Stuart Huff is a stand-up comedian that Greg and I talked to. And he talked about, it's one of my favorite moments of We're Libertarians of all time, where he talks about people running towards a car crash, and they're not sitting there running going, I hope this isn't a Jew.
Oh yeah.
I wonder if this person's black. They're going, that's a human who is in trouble. I'm there to help. You know, and I thought that was such a great illustration. Yeah, like I was saying, I think we have, as libertarians sometimes, I hear Jason Stapleton, and I don't mean to criticize because I like Jason a lot. I listened to him talk about the culture war, and he's like, I don't want to wait. He just doesn't want to wade into it.
Right.
Anybody can do whatever they want as long as the government isn't involved. I agree, but I also kind of don't agree. Because people have the right to live differently than me, think differently than me, believe differently than me. But if you want to do heroin, for instance, you can do that. That's your right. But is that the right thing for you to do? No. There are self-destructive tendencies. And the way that you get out of those self-destructive tendencies is through the help of other people. Yeah. You know, we find meaning and we find rescuing and we find help in friendship and family and group dynamics, and the idea that we're all individuals who are isolated onto our own island, and I don't need other people, and I'm just going to think for myself, and that's not what individualism is. Individualism is the idea that you own yourself, mm-hmm. but we still have some level of community, and because you're just... You're never going to not have people around you. So you libertarians love to figure out how to build a society without government, but never think about what society looks like on the other side of that.
And I always check individualism, not just as you stated, but also that you don't have to pay the sins for anybody else based off of any identity that you are part of. Like, you are you, and you're a product of your own experiences and thoughts and relationships that have built you. So just because you might have the same facial structure as somebody else doesn't mean you're anything like them, or you like the things that they like. Or, like, if you're a part of the black community and you don't like rap music, it's like, it's okay. You don't have to. It's not a part of thing that you need to be. Like,
right.
a white person doesn't like square dancing, even though apparently that's racist now, that Henry Ford invented racism, invented square dancing for racist reasons. I don't know if you heard about that.
I don't give a fuck.
But it's like, you like, should be an individual.
There's no person
that makes no sense.
There's no person right now square dancing going, I hate those black people. Like,
somebody actually wrote this as an article last week. It's hilarious. But,
whatever.
But as an individual, though, you shouldn't be like judged based off of what other people who are like you have done. Or you're your own individual, and you have to start seeing people as individuals, not just in a legal sense, but just understanding that, you know, everybody brings something unique to the table, and you can learn something from anybody.
All right. So, final thoughts, Chris Galt.
I have one thing to say. Why have we been in Afghanistan for 17 years?
There are kids.
Why are we still there?
There are kids fighting.
That's my final thought.
There are kids in Afghanistan who are fighting, who have no cognizant memory of 9/11.
How many people remember society without us being at war? It's been so long. I mean, I do because I'm old, but a lot of people don't, and it saddens me.
He's nearly a boomer.
Scares me.
He's almost a boomer.
2 years out of being a boomer.
A boomer.
Wow.
And Chris was saying earlier that us old guys need to tell the young'uns, and I'm just sitting there going,
disgusting.
Hey!
Reinhold, final thoughts?
It was a great episode. Like I said, I think we could go forever on this on these topics, but
we kind of
But
I said I had a lot to say.
You did too.
And you did. Yeah, lots to say. Hopefully you don't pay.
You
for
got
it
tomorrow. Off, and you sounded good.
I've been sitting playing Mario Kart in my apartment for 3 weeks without the ability to talk to everybody, and just like I've been posting way more on Facebook because it's just like I've got a lot to say to you people.
But nope, it's been and it was a great talk and great conversation.
We will see how my voice is tomorrow. I'm feeling a little. I'm not feeling great right now. So we may, and I apologize to everybody who expects 2 week. But if the next couple days isn't great, I may do one episode a week until I kind of get this cleared up here in the next. It was probably the next 2 weeks. It should be fine. But
hopefully by convention.
Oh, yeah. So just to let you know, if there is only one episode next week, that's why. I just don't want to do anything that will permanently hurt my voice or require, you know, you can get polyps and stuff like that. So I got to be careful with it. But really great to come back and talk to you guys. Want to thank Brandon Luke, Craig DaCosta, Christy Avery, and Jason Doolittle. Jason's actually coming into town. So very excited to have him on the program.
Nice.
That'll be next month. Can't wait to go to Pork Fest. Gonna have Roger Paxton. We're gonna fight, mud wrestle, probably a little pudding fight. Maybe get down to our skivvies and finally settle this. Minarchist versus anarchist, who wins? National Libertarian Convention. I will be at the National Libertarian Convention. If you are going, I want to meet you up. I will be there Monday and really just kind of Sunday, Monday. So I leave early on Tuesday. So there's a radio row, apparently. So hopefully, if I ever hear back from the national party about my credentials after 2 months, hey, LP, there's one media outlet on the planet that gives you a fair shake. It's me. Treat me with more respect. Pieces. Never mind. Love Wes. Loved everybody up there. They're doing their best. They're working hard and busy. But this is crazy unprofessional. So, and I am going to Podcast Movement in July in Philly. So very excited about it. Always wanted to go to Podcast Movement. So I will be there. If you're going, let me know. Very excited to learn about more about the tech of podcasting and see what's new out there. So that's going to be fun. Three major trips in the span of 1 month.
His Tinder profile says travel.
There'll be more stuff for this. There'll be more stuff for the Chris Spangle show on how to do podcasting when you come back from that, right?
Yep, absolutely. Nice. Yep. I've got the platform already kind of all built out. I just have never gotten around to it. So, all right, thanks for joining us here on the program, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of We Are Libertarians. I'm amazed you made it to the very end, and I appreciate that. And that means that you were a true fan of We Are Libertarians, and any true fan of We Are Libertarians should listen to our other podcasts. We have a whole network of shows. We have The Chris Spangle Show, where I talk about many of my varied interests that aren't political, a lot of podcasting talk, if you're interested in getting involved in podcasting. The Brian Nichols Show. Brian talks to a lot of different folks from the left, the right, the center, libertarian movement. If you love We Are Libertarians, you will love The Brian Nichols Show. The Boss Hog of Liberty. The Boss Hog has basically created a media empire in his small town and has taken over along with his co-host Dakota Davis. I think it's really interesting to see how they've built a media network, and I encourage you to do the same. Upward Political Training. It's a podcast where I've put a lot of training for libertarians on how to spread the message. The Cost. This is a podcast where we break down the human costs of government policy, so be sure to check that out. Raw Audio Politics, where basically I take unedited speeches and interviews and stuff that I want to listen to, and I put it in a podcast feed for you. Miranda's World. Miranda is one of the craziest human beings in a good way that I've ever met. She's so entertaining and so much fun, and I think you will love that. And who could not listen to Tad Talk? Tad Western brings you the rootinest, tootinest good time this side of the Mississippi. So be sure to check that out. He's one of the funniest human beings that I know. And if you are chubby and you need to get in shape,
Then you can't outrun the fork with Brett Bittner, where he talks about keto. Yes, I gave Brett Bittner a show. And you can check out a bunch of other podcasts at libertarianpodcasts.com. I have put together all of my favorite libertarian podcasts up there at libertarianpodcast.com, including our friends Lions of Liberty, The Lava Flow, The Johnny Rocket Launchpad, The Scott Horton Show is one that I definitely think you should be listening to. So go check that out. Lots of great libertarian podcasts out there. You may not know where to start. Start there. And we've also got a comprehensive list of all the libertarian podcasts I can find. Thank you for listening. And if you love We Are Libertarians, please check out all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.